can I open this episode?
Yeah. More than welcome to, mate. There you go.
Yeah, 100%. Okay. Got no issue with that.
Yeah. It's not a poem or anything. Hey, Chris.
Yeah.
What's your soul worth?
What's my soul worth?
Put a monetary value on your mortal soul.
Oh, Jesus. I don't know. I walked out to me crossroads one night and no one turned up, mate. I was there at midnight.
That's because you no longer own your soul.
All right.
Anyway, Bluetooth's not working.
Oh, no. It hasn't automatically connected to mine.
We're going to call your master, but I'll tell you the story.
Yep.
About 25 years ago.
Yep.
You signed a 21st birthday card.
All right.
For a certain chap.
Yeah.
Mr. Wade, right?
Yeah. Your bro.
Well, when you signed that card,
yep,
you signed over your soul to him.
Was that written down on the card at
Very
all?
Very fine print, mate. You couldn't have seen it. Right down the bottom of the card.
Yeah.
Whoever signs this card hereby forfeits their soul to Wade Wright.
Fuck. I don't know whether he'd want mine. Mine would need a bit of a polish up, I reckon.
Well, he's got it.
He's
willing to sell it back to you.
Yeah? Fucking, what's
you can't polish it because then you'll be a purist.
Yeah, well, what's the retail on fucking, on an old Moses?
We have to set a price. He's willing to sell for any price.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Hang on, he's just texting.
Yeah, he's texting me now. He'll give us an update.
He said he can't give it up.
He can't
because he's already sold it.
He's unsold it.
Yeah.
Not to the fucking Grohl.
Dave Grohl.
Oh, for fuck's sake. I reckon he needed one.
well, he's got yours.
Yeah, he's got mine.
So, don't know, what, 2100?
Hey, fucking, I don't know about 2100, Scotty. I've got to fucking still pay you too along the way.
Anyway, you soulless bastard.
Man, there you go. Oh, well, I don't know how I'm still getting these little weird synchronicities in me world with no soul. So, yeah, I must have an imitation soul.
Well, you just don't have it.
Just don't have it at all.
It's not that you'd ever know about it.
Well, how can you tell? What's the?
Well, you can't.
What's the symptoms?
That's the beauty of it. You just don't know.
But aren't they linked to nature and, you know, linked to your personal nature and the things you stand for? Is that connected to yourself?
I don't believe in it, so.
There you go. We'll see what happens. I think probably when it's time to cash in the chips, that's probably when it'll impact.
Yeah, you'll get to the pearly gates, mate, and you'll be fucked.
Sorry, mate, but your e-tag's not working. Yeah. Pulled with a sword, thanks.
Yeah, no, there you go. Fucking Wade, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't mind if he was still holding it. He might, you know, we could negotiate to get it back, but if he's unsold it.
Well, I think he still owns it, mate, so have to negotiate privately with him.
Oh, there you go. How many souls did he catch that night?
Everyone that was there and signed the card.
Everyone that signed the card?
Yep.
Oh, fuck's sake.
I bought mine back years ago.
Oh, did you? How many did you pay?
Just bartered it.
I don't know. Can you barter mine on my behalf?
No, you'll have to negotiate privately with the master.
Oh, there you go. Fuck. No wonder they didn't front at the crossroads that night.
Yep.
And my crossroads is out the back of Springmount on the Dalesford Road. And for the bloke, and Scotty will get this one too. I skinny because 23rd of the 3rd. But there's a certain intersection there that's 23 k's from Dalesford and 3 k's from Newland. And it's 23 k's from Ballarat and 3 k's from Dean.
23.
And they used to have the sign up there saying 23-3, 23-3 on that fucking signpost. It's that old church on the left-hand side as you're heading towards Newland.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I came past one night and the sign was gone. Someone had actually cut the top off it to take the 23-3s in case I saw it. And I reckon it was probably 2.3 km from my house. I measured it one night in my ED Fairmont. So that was me crossroads. And no one showed, but didn't have a soul to fucking surrender.
Nope. And you didn't know.
And I didn't even fucking know. There you go. Oh, well.
There was a little pentagram too that he drew, so I don't know whether that makes it a bit more dark for you.
Yeah, I've got one on my guts.
Yeah.
Got one tattooed on my guts with flaming friggin' swords.
Was that after the 21st you got that done?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. I don't know whether I've been in the control of Mr. Wade Wright all these years without realising.
Well, you know, is it Sim that you hear in his brother's studio?
Well, there you go. You know, I was just thinking that as you were saying it.
We're pulling all the strings.
Pulling all the strings, yeah, you know, absolutely. I thought my world was mine. What a way to start out episode 64. And we've got the new media up. We've got Skinny, couldn't get down the road because he's on call for work and he's on call for any potential hospital outcomes if he has to run the good lady off and fucking cut the cord. So how's it all going, Skinny?
Yeah, pretty action-packed week is how I'd put it. yeah, on call for work in the middle of the heat waves, never a good thing. Well, it's good for the pay packet, probably not good for anything else. Being on call while your fiance is 6 days away from being due to give birth kind of raises the stakes a little bit. But that's okay. Yeah, we just work around that. Just got to take it one day at a time.
I don't know whether anyone from your work's listening to the podcast, but we did run out of service at one stage. Oh, you ran out of battery at one stage and you were on call. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's happened a few times. It happened the other night, actually, as well. Yeah, I was on call and actually had an interesting week. The Bluebirds had an interesting week, actually. I got a, off the back of last episode, selling cars via Facebook Marketplace and Gumtree was always an interesting experience. So I get a random Facebook message, my inbox, on Monday from a woman who purported to be an art director for a studio wanting to know if I could use the Bluebird or if she could use the Bluebird in a television commercial campaign. And I promptly looked at the message and decided that was going into the waste delete items folder.
Yep.
But I had a look at her profile, seemed legit, so I sent her a text message. Within 5 minutes, she called and we'd organised for my car to be used as part of an upcoming Dan Murphy's ad campaign series. So that happened Wednesday afternoon. I took the car to a bowling alley in Preston for the camera rig to be fitted. I'll put some photos up on our Instagram. Now, I didn't really get a lot of photos. When you're supplying, I assumed the car was going to be a prop. When you're supplying things like props, you kind of just, you have the option of them picking a car up and they do what they want to do and they drop it back. Or in my case, I drove it there. I was there with the car while it was being used. They fitted a camera rig to it. They filmed some scenes there. Then we moved to another location and they filmed, for, I don't know how many scenes, but it was quite the late night by the time we were all said and done. But they did drive the car. The car was jacked up and had a wheel removed for a tyre change scene as well. I can't obviously divulge too much because, A, I wasn't there when I was backstage when the filming was taking place, and B, like, I don't really want to blow these guys' ad campaign. So
no, totally get that.
They've in saying that, I'd sign any paperwork, so you know it's not an issue for me to talk about my experience anyway. But it was an interesting experience. I was very humbled that out of all the cars that they could have looked at, and they went through an agency and couldn't find anything suitable, and my car, the art director said that was exactly what they wanted for this ad campaign. So it was really, really interesting experience. It got a lot of love. The car got a lot of love. Everyone loved it. The guy who drove it loved driving it. The art director, all the creative types that sort of sit around that have come up with this concept, they were really happy. It seemed to fit the bill in exactly what they wanted. So. Awesome. Yeah, it was an interesting experience. That was pretty cool. Yeah.
Any purchases in there, mate? They weren't thrown off. Is that you to own it?
Yeah, I did have a couple of people ask me, you know, if I was, they knew the car was for sale, but I did have a couple of people from the crew that were interested in it, and we'll just see what comes off the back of it. I've had a couple of inquiries this week, coincidentally, which aren't nonsense. So we'll just see what happens. Yeah, but it's, yeah, I've filtered a lot of stuff. You get a lot of correspondence on Messenger and Gumtree, so you learn to filter it.
Yep.
But yeah, like Simo putting his through 782. Yeah, I can see why he would go down that path, 100%.
Looks amazing too, I think. In the videos and stuff too. Disturbia just looks phenomenal, you know, like they've done such a great job.
And like Shannon's, I work just up the road from the Shannon's corporate headquarters here in Melbourne, and they have a big auction hall. Those people who have been there would know there's a massive warehouse out the back where they have cars on display. They have auction nights there. They've pulled out of that.
Yeah. They've pulled out of the auctions. Yeah, well, those that follow Moses McCready on Instagram would have been seeing a whole lot of them, because I was only loading around the corner anyway at the vet warehouse there. So I was constantly walking through and putting updates. But every now and again, someone that follows me on social media would put up their new car, which would have come out of that room too. So I used to say to them, I don't know how many cars I've sold for you, but, you know, and I actually used that to get myself in there during COVID times and, yeah, not sign the book and a few dodgy bloody practices, but they kind of just let me wander through me leisure.
Well, with the change in Shannon's ownership to Suncorp, I'm led to believe that they're just getting out of the auctions. They're cutting a lot of cost out of that business. So it's been a few redundancies, and you know, the whole auction automotive specialist side of it, from what I've been told, is they're just walking away from that. So that'll be interesting to see, you know, how that goes. But someone like 782 probably doesn't deal with restored stuff. Like Shannon's sell a lot of restored and Euro and high end. Whilst they sure modified, I don't think that's really what they deal with as when it comes to buying and selling. 782 seem to do a lot of that.
Yeah, well, see, Dave Guilfoyle was talking about the HT Prem. We were talking about whether he might consider putting that one down there, which would look pretty mad sitting there, silver mink or red trim with its blower. But,
yeah,
so he's just listed the car this week, taking kind of expressions of interest on it. So, but I think he's got a bit of joy out of it.
It's an interesting thing when you're selling cars, because I'm in a position very similar to Simo, where I'd like to move on to another project, but I've got space as a premium at the moment, probably more so with a second baby coming. But so I don't have the ability to have multiple cars undercover secured. So that's why I've decided to advertise a Bluebird. If I get what I want for it, it will go, and then we'll move on to something else. If I don't get what I want for it, I will keep it. And we'll probably be pulling it down and doing a fair bit of work to the electricals, and just it's a reliable car, but you know, it's 43 years old too, so we've got to do needs a bit of TLC. So yeah, that's pretty much my week in a nutshell, as far as domestic bliss, if you to quote Simo, and what's been going on in my world. But yeah, the ad campaign's pretty cool. I don't know when it's going to air. I didn't get it. I did ask a question, but they were a bit sort of non-committal to that. Apparently, it's a series of different commercials. Like there's, you know, five or six different scenes that were filmed. So there was quite a lot in it. And I had absolutely no idea. I've never been involved in TV production ever, aside from doing air conditioning in TV studios for Channel 7 and a few other studios over the years, but I've never been involved with production at all. It was a massive undertaking. They took over this whole bowling alley. The crew, the guys that do all the audio and the visual and set up cameras, and they call these guys the grips that do all the staging and sound and lighting and that. I've never seen a bunch of blokes work so hard, but there must have been between art department, creatives, the grips, the production crew, guys that drive cars. They had a water tanker there because one scene was filmed in the rain, so they had a 30,000-litre water tanker there with a cannon that was, you know, shooting water over it. I think I put a video up of that. Mate, there must have been, I reckon a conservative estimate would have been 50 to 60 people involved in. So, you know, next time you watch a TV commercial, the amount of sheer labour involved in the production, and I spoke to the one of the girls there that was on the creative team, and they'd been working on this concept for over 12 months, closer to 18 months. They've been working on the concept and just getting it to the stage where it was being filmed was an 18-month process. So
wow.
We all complain about TV commercials and we fast forward through them. But there is a significant undertaking in getting a TV commercial to air. And I've got a whole new respect for that process after being involved in it. It was really cool.
That's just the pre-production and production. And then there's the post-production. One of my best mates is one of the guys that does all the comping VFX stuff. So, you know, if the light's not right, he'll make the light better. Or if it's dark, he'll brighten it. You know, all the video stuff.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, his hours are crazy. And, you know, one ad can take months for completion because then it's his job and then it's the audio guy, the audio mixer's job, and it's just nuts.
Yeah.
So imagine the cost, like just to put that ad together, what Dan Murphy's got to pay to do that ad when there's so much behind it and so much in front of it.
Yeah.
You know, like it's huge.
Yeah. Big dollars.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it was quite the earner for me as well. And I've actually come out the back end of that with a car. There is an agency for cars, believe it or not.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I'll post a link up to it on our Instagram page, but I've basically come out of it with the – so they go through an agency. There is one called Cars for the Stars. This one, bear with me a sec. I will shout them out because they're actually really nice people to deal with. And if you've got a unique car, they want to talk to you. It's called Max Action Vehicles. They're down at Corio. They've got a website. You can maxactionvehicles.com.au. They supply cars to film studios and to advertising agencies, anything, you know, media wise. Cars that are used in background traffic, cars that are feature cars of movies, cars like props, you name it. All those cars, like when you see a TV show where they've got a line of cars down the street.
Yep.
A lot of the time they'll be props. Not all the time, but a lot of the time they will be prop cars that they get through an agency. They'll be obviously the cars they use in feature films and in TV commercials, etc. are hired. They're rented. They rent the cars. So I was paid a fee for the day, plus incidentals, or you know, they fed me and all that as well. But you know, obviously I was with the car. That doesn't always happen. Not a lot of time they'll just take the car, they'll pick it up, deliver it, etc. It's all done very professionally. I'm sure a lot of guys in our scene that operate tow trucks have probably picked cars up and dropped them off for TV commercials, but they want cars on the books. So my car's now on the books with Max Action. So if a studio wants it, they'll make an inquiry and we'll negotiate to have a car used. That was something that's coming out of the back of that. So, yeah, it was an interesting sort of conversation that I had with the art director and also with Deb from Max Action, only via email with her, but very interesting. If you've got a car sitting in your garage that you're not using, particularly something 70s, 80s, they don't have a lot of that stuff on the books. And, you know, the message I basically was given was that it's very hard to find 70s, 80s, 90s cars in good condition that they can use for filming. And they are on the hunt. So, yeah, if you're looking to maybe – if you've got a car that sits around and you're looking to maybe register with a studio, you might find yourself, you know, if they hire it for a couple of weeks, you know, there's a few thousand dollars in the bank there. So it was an interesting thing. It was a very interesting week with that. Yeah, it was great.
You're willing to disclose the personal earn for your day, mate?
My day was $1,100 in my back pocket, so.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that wasn't, which, you know, and it came out of nowhere. So I was yeah, really interesting process.
You know, so, fantastic.
You never know. Yeah, it's a really interesting thing, and I've got a whole new respect for that TV creative enterprise. It's amazing.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I suppose $12 of that might have had to go towards the latest Street Machine magazine, mate.
Well, funny you say that. It actually turned up last night at 7 o'clock in my letterbox. I went out to the letterboxes. I asked Carly, you know, where's the, have you seen it? Because it hasn't turned up. And this has been a thing probably since November last year where it doesn't rock up till, you know, it's through been in the shops for nearly a week before it turns up in my letterbox. But yeah, it turned up last night, so avoided the early dash to the newsagent this morning.
Yeah, well, I was only talking to Scotty about it earlier. I was just saying, you know, considering you were going into secondhand shops buying it at 12, then the parents started buying the annual subscription, and now at bloody 44, while you're reviewing it into the podcast, yeah, maybe we need to see it in your letterbox a little bit sooner.
Yeah, it's strange. I think we've all got a story with postage and freight. But I order a lot of spare parts and things for in the course of my work that come from overseas as well as all over Australia. And I've had parts coming out of Japan and the US, air freight, into Australia within, you know, by the time I get my admin girl to place the order, I've had those land in within 72 hours, and I've struggled to get stuff from Sydney. Within a week, it's ridiculous. I don't understand.
I struggled to get an invoice across Ballarat in an envelope with a stamp on it within a month. Like, just, you know, it's getting a bit hard.
If you, I've got a Australia Post app on my phone, you know, so you post something, and my family's all, you know, not in Victoria. I don't have any family here. So everything's going by the mail. I send a parcel to my parents. My parents live in Batemans Bay. It's on the south coast of New South Wales. Now, it'll go from Melbourne to Sydney. It'll go from Sydney to Newcastle, which is north of Sydney. For those that don't know, it's 200 kilometres north of Sydney. Then it'll do a U-turn and come back to Canberra. And then it'll sit in Canberra for 3 or 4 days, and then it'll go by road to Wollongong, which is, you know, halfway between Canberra and Sydney, but on the coast.
Yep.
And then it'll go from Wollongong by road down to Batemans Bay. Like, when you look at the tracking, you just go, well,
yeah.
I don't know why you can't just, you do a mail service to Canberra. Why can't just fly it to Canberra and put it by road? I've got no idea. But anyway, logistics is a whole other world. None of us really know how that operates, but yeah, very interesting.
Continuing on with our general business, I wanted to give Scotty a shout out with his marvellous Redactive Audio Studios for putting together the last episode with 6 separate vocal tracks to mix down. And, you know, everything takes time, and everything, and time costs money. But
what an effort.
Yeah, and also shout out Heath Gutter to Gutter, because apparently, yeah, Static's hooked you onto this new system we're using today to speak to Scott Kenny.
Yep. We've given StreamYard a try over Zencaster. Seems better. So happy so far.
Yeah, audio is 10 times better.
Yeah, and of course, you know, Scotty's time isn't free either. Like, you know, we get off the back of this talking about commercials and everything.
Tick tock.
So, you know, we never do it, but I'll do a bit of a call out. You know, if you're a passionate follower of our podcast and you've been listening and you know what we stand for and you might have a product that we can spruik, I would do a sponsor call out. So,
why not?
Shoot us a message. You know, we've also got our neverlatepodcast@gmail.com. You can shoot us an email, whatever. We're up for it. Up to consider a few options anyway that might rein in a few costs, because looking at an outside broadcast as well, possibly coming up in April, which, again, you know, costs are significant. You know, Skenny's working his ass off in his job. I'm sort of running a small business that's up and down and floating around. We're just sort of investing our own money. So,
well, yeah, you're paying to play basically at the moment.
Yeah.
Well, I have been since day one. So,
and I've always said, like, I've spent far more money on things that were far worse for me, because this is just leaves you with that feel good buzz as well. So,
I look at it as where, you know, I'm giving back to the street machining that's, you know, given so much to me over the years. But we're happy to sort of, if someone wants to support us in that way, we're happy to kind of represent their organisation. And it doesn't have to be an automotive related business either. I don't think if you're running a small business and you're looking for a bit of a leg up and a bit of exposure, don't feel like you can't talk to us because it's not car related. So, you know, neither of us work in a car related field. No, this that's is purely hobby for us. We're not employed in the industry at all. So, yeah.
And we're I'll take the point to mention we're international as well. Like, we've got listeners all over the bloody globe too. So
look, yeah. If it gets desperate, just set up an OnlyFans for fuck's sake.
OnlyFans, yeah, no.
Or maybe Feet Finder.
I've had a running joke about setting up an OnlyFans called the Fat Fridgie. So maybe I'll have to do it, you know.
You might be surprised at what interest you get for shit like that, mate.
I nearly got beaten by 7 balls at the pool table the other day. They said, you might have to drop the pants. I said, well, that's all right. You wouldn't be able to see anything for all the bloody wool that's in there. So, you know, I might need a tidy up if we're going down that path.
Manscape, friend, Manscape.
It's an investment, mate.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I just want to say too, got me a little stubby holder here. I'm having a breakfast hard-rated can, but Newbridge car show that I went to, absolutely amazing. Never been to Newbridge before I worked out when I rolled in there, but absolutely filled and over with cars, amazing people. People from Ballarat, Bendigo, bloody Maribara, just, yeah, covered everyone. So, yeah, Johnny Hooter and the boys that were a big part of putting that on. Because Hooter's a listener of ours too. He's a passionate fan. He sort of keeps on talking about us to dear mate Johnny as well. So, no, they did really well for just something that was put on spur of the moment. You know, a bit of an idea a bloke had, and everyone ran at it. And amazing show, so that was great. Speaking of shows, this is a bit late to bloody spruik this one into an episode, but I'm off to Horsham to the Car and Bike Show for the WAC fundraiser, which is the Wimmera Against Cancer in Kids. Clarkie and Barney and the boys will be on the ground again. You know, in a world where it's going to be 36 in Ballarat, not hot enough for me. I'm going to Horsham. It'll be 40.
yeah, mate, it's she's going to be a warm one up there, that's for sure. It'll be a nice, you drive the Nash up there?
Yeah, taking the Nash up there. But I think I've sort of...
enjoy that air conditioning that you don't have.
Yeah, no, I'll just turn the vent windows in on myself. But basically, I was saying too, even at Queenscliff in 35-degree heat, I had to keep turning the fans off so it wouldn't stall out at roundabouts for running too cold. So my car's kind of suited to do a bit of road tripping. So that should be all good.
Actually, I wouldn't mind shouting out just a little local event. This was totally random. I knew this was on. I've had this this event has cropped up a few times in the past, but I finally drove the 1.3 kilometres down the road to check it out a couple of weeks ago on a Saturday night. Took Reese and Carly, and we put him in the car and took him down there. I actually took the Bluebird down. It's Autobahn Narre Warren put on a car show a couple of Saturdays ago, and I didn't take any photos because, surprise, surprise, my phone went flat. but we got. I do have Sarky Carly took some on my behalf. I might post them up if I remember. Autobahn Narre Warren put on a car show, and it was huge. It filled the Autobahn car park, the Bunnings car park. It's kind of like a homemaker centre, if you like, so a big open car park. That was full. The entire Bunnings car park was full. And then across the road, we have like another homemaker centre with Anaconda and Total Tools and Repco, and that car park was full too. There was quite a few big hitter cars there, like that Evil GQ Patrol.
Yep.
Was driven to the event, which, yeah, that car's awesome. If anyone saw that drag challenge, I think that's been a Street Machine past issue. So that was driven there. There was quite a lot of US muscle there. It was packed. There was traffic control there. There was, you know, thousands of people. Not, you know, probably a good 2,500, 3,000. A lot of people crammed into that area, and it was quite hard to get around because the amount of people. But really relaxed vibe, no one being stupid, and it was just something really cool that was like on a couple of kilometres from where I live. So it was interesting, and I really enjoyed that. Yeah, just an impromptu Saturday night.
Yeah, a lot of people I follow post from there. I always see a lot of photos coming from that way. And it just, yeah, again, it feels a long way from Ballarat, you know. Like, most of what I want to go to is on the east side, which is, I guess, why that DIY workshop car show that's coming up on the 13th of April is a bit appealing. Kind of really splits the difference between you and I if we were to think about going there and doing an OB. Yeah. So I'll keep working on that one for sure.
Yeah, we'll be cheering away on that in the background. But, It was just an impromptu Saturday afternoon. I was I can't remember how it came up, but it was the little event calendar thing in the Facebook app. I clicked on it just randomly looking at it. And was said to my fiance, "Oh, this is on." Old of mine going down. Actually, the wagon, I might just take the wagon. I'll just go for a drive. And, my son's, he's doomed as well. So we just jumped in. We actually ended up taking two cars because I drove a wagon down there and parked it up. And then, she come down and we went for a wander around with a, can of soft drink and a hamburger and just had a bit of a look. And it was good. It was a really good event. Just, shout out to those guys. Autobahn Ari Warren, I'm pretty sure the ones that organised it and ran it. They had a PA system there. I think they were doing awards. I didn't stick around for too long because I had to get the young bloke off to bed. But, it was really good. Really enjoyed it. So, just a quick shout out to those guys. Well done.
Awesome. Well, going down now further through my general business points that I've mentioned, had a guest cancellation. Actually, I've had two guest cancellations for today. I would have had someone in the room with me as well. But, Bill Angel, E-type Jag guru, coach builder, beta painter, fabricator, CNC machinist, amazing guy, has had to go in for a little bit of spinal surgery. He knew it was coming up. This would be his third time where they're cutting into his spine over the last 15 years. But also I just want to say anyone in the Ballarat area who's got a little bit of panel beating nous, a little bit of fabrication nous, this guy at 71 is pretty much screaming for help. He's one bloke. He's got probably 15 E-types in there in various stages of left to right hand drive conversion and restoration, and he just needs some good support, I reckon. So, but I even said to him, bloke in his 50s is tempted to come and give you a few hours, and he goes, "What, do you got a bit of panel beat skill?" I said, "No, well, it'd take us 4 or 5 weeks to work out whether I was worth frigging paying, mate." But, and he said he'd still find a spot for me. So, if anyone in the Ballarat area wants to shoot me a message, I could definitely put you in touch with Bill. Go and play on some E-type Jags and learn a bit of high-end fab stuff. That's an option. The other guest I had was highlighted through a friend of mine recently. He's had a bit of a dilemma. They've started a GoFundMe, and I think I'll read it into here because his missus, Tegan, has actually written it up pretty well. So bear with me. My partner, Craig, is a hard-working family man and has a passion for cars, in particular Fords. He found his almost perfect 99 Ford XH XR8 Ute in 2020 for his daily driver. In order for it not to get damaged while sitting in the work car park in all the elements, his use needed some preventative work on the tub. Craig got the tonneau cover replaced with a hard lid and also a few extra modifications for good measure. All that was needed now is a fresh coat of paint. Craig worked for 3 different companies, pulling double shifts, ridiculous hours, sometimes 20-plus hours, and spending valuable time away from his young family to save any money he could after making sure his family was covered to pay for these modifications and the paint job. Craig found a painter he was extremely happy with after seeing some of their previous work on another XH. He got in contact with the business and received a quote. In March 2022, Craig and a good mate drove the 1,074-kilometre round trip to drop off the XH for its new paint job. Little did Craig know that it would be 20 months before he would see his ute again, and it definitely would not look like how he remembered it or thought it would look. On the 24th, 11th, 2023, Craig and another good mate again drove the 1,074-kilometre round trip to retrieve what should have been a fully painted XH XR8, only to bring home an unpainted jigsaw puzzle that resembles an XH. During these 20 months of back-and-forth phone calls, emails and messages full of lies and excuses as to why the ute had not been finished, with only small items getting done as breadcrumbs to keep Craig's business instead of him taking his money elsewhere. This took a huge mental toll on him, but he still managed to keep going with work and general life. On the 23rd of the 11th, 2023, an email from the business came in stating that Craig had less than a week to organise a trailer and get to South Australia to pick up his uncompleted ute. As you can imagine, after all the patience Craig had over this time, was all for nothing. They also tried to tell Craig he still owed a further $4,000, even after the quote was paid in full. However, the owner told Craig she was willing to waive any money owed if Craig signed a waiver saying he agreed not to pursue any legal action against herself or the business. That screams that they are doing the wrong thing. After talking to police, lawyers, family and friends, who at most had advised that fighting her would only end with Craig being more out of pocket than the $12,000 he already is, it was decided that crowdfunding was his best option to get the ute back to an acceptable state, even though he was reluctant to ask for help from anyone, like usual. Any money donated will be going directly into helping Craig get his ute painted, put back together and on the road again, instead of the undercoat, glass-missing shamble it currently is. This will help Craig to get in a much better mental state and also to be able to spend some quality time with his young family instead of going back to overtime at work and working other jobs. After working so hard at three jobs to save his money, only to be robbed of 12 grand, we hope that we can finally have our partner and dad back, mentally and physically. Any amount you're willing to contribute is so greatly appreciated, and if you aren't able to contribute money at this time, a share with your friends and family would mean the world as well. Thank you, Tegan Johnson, Craig's partner. So I'm going to post the link in our social medias for Craig. But
yep. Let's do that.
And you were saying too, Skenny, that it's just perfect because, you know, what we've touched on in the last episode too, just around those mental health impacts, just when people are criticising and attacking vehicles, if nothing else, it just seemed to land on my desk at exactly the time it needed to. And, I mean, I would have brought Craig in with me today, but he said there were two things that were sort of holding him back. One, work. He's got a mad work ethic and he had to work today and he was really struggling just to pull a day off. But the other one is that mental health situation where sometimes it is just hard to front up for things, you know. It's another dear listener who we were going to have involved too in that last episode has kind of admitted to me too that, you know, it's the mental health strain that he's got at the moment that probably sapped him of energy from being involved in our last episode. So, the impact's real, you know. Blokes are struggling out there, you know, and I know.
Yeah, look, there's been a few things occur in the last few weeks just in the general world that have highlighted mental health and people's behaviour. That story, Street Machine's littered with it. You could go through issues of Street Machine and read stories about cars being dropped off at shops and shops not holding up their end of the deal. I've been through this with a certain engine/automotive workshop that will remain nameless that, you know, I agreed to have some engine work done, dropped a vehicle off, paid a portion of the money, and, you know, it never happened. And there was excuse after excuse after excuse. Parts were taken off the car and put on other people's vehicles. And, you know, there was a whole bunch of things that and culminated in me basically giving the owner an ultimatum of put it back together so I can drive it out of here, or, you know, we'll go down another path to resolve the situation. So, you know, and I was presented with an invoice for, you know, a sum of money. This is what you owe. And, you know, I'm like, mate, I've paid you a deposit and an initial sum of money to start the job, and you're not anywhere near finished. So you're not getting another cent. Just put the car back so we can get rid of it and we'll just call it a day. That shop within 2 weeks was closed up and gone. It's really common. People, particularly it seems like if you look around social media or just talk to people at cars and coffee events and things like that, it seems like there's a lot of body shops out there that are quite willing to take money and either deliver substandard work or, in you know, this case, not even finish a job and then turn around and go bust.
Yeah, what we call
after people, then people take people put their faith in businesses to do the right thing, and businesses don't do the right thing. You know, it's not just automotive. Look at the amount of builders that have gone under and have taken people's money. People saved up to buy houses or build houses and have just been absolutely rinsed of any sort of money that, you know, they've been able to accumulate. And it's grubby. It's a grubby thing to do, to take someone's money and not deliver, not fulfill what you, if you can't do a job or you don't want the job, and I deal with this a lot in what I do for work. If you don't want to do a job, don't do it. If you can't take a job on because you're too busy, don't do it. A lot of shops are taking on work just because they want money in the door, and then they can't do it, and then they get pressure from owners. So then they cut corners.
Yeah.
Or they're operators that shouldn't be operating a business and are taking cars, taking people's money, and have no intention of doing any sort of work at all. You know, for the owner of that shop to make the car owner, put a car in a position where she said, well, if you agree not to pursue me legally, I'll let this $4,000 invoice go.
Yeah.
That's disgusting behaviour.
Absolutely disgraceful. And the problem
you know, the thing is, right?
Yep.
The big problem, I don't want to get too soapboxy about it, but it drives me to drink because I see it a lot. The biggest issue is they shut that shop and liquidate it. They're starting a shop with a new ABN next week and they're just going to do the same thing to somebody else.
Yeah. The problem too is
it's
that
it's just filthy.
We find, you know, even in our audience, you know, a lot of people opposite operate with total honesty and integrity, you know, and it's hard to spot a scam coming at you when you are an honest and open person. You know, you don't see it. You know, you can get shafted on the way through, you know, because you just expect everyone acts the way you act. You know, you take someone on their word and a handshake and then all of a sudden it turns around and bites you in the ass. So, no, I just wanted to put that out for Craig and the family.
I'll share another little story, actually, that I come across last night. So I got a random phone call yesterday from a guy who's interested in buying my car. And a lovely bloke. He's just about to start his swing in the mines in South Australia. So we had a quick chat before he started his night shift about, you know, my car.
Yep.
He is a car guy. He's had Volkswagens and seems just like a really genuine bloke to talk to on the phone, as opposed to some of the other clowns I've had come into the inbox. This bloke seemed pretty genuine. And he told me what had happened to him was he had found a car interstate, had negotiated a deal with the owner of the vehicle, and then had transferred the money to buy this car. So transferred, you know, close to $10,000 to this guy to purchase this vehicle. Thought it was all said and done. He's on night shift, so he's gone in to get a bit of shut eye, and he's woken up to a notification on his phone. There's a car sales ad that the ad had increased in price by $4,000. So he rang the guy and said, mate, just a query in this ad. You know, it's gone up by $4,000. And that the owner then turned around or the seller turned around and said to him, yeah, sorry, mate, I've been offered $4,000 more for the car, so I'm taking it. I'll transfer the money back to you.
Oh, fuck's sake.
Now, there's a guy who, in good faith, has transferred a substantial amount of money. And this is, you know, this can be a really fickle process. He's transferred money to a guy. The money's obviously the seller's not going to release the car till the funds are clear, which is fair enough. But the buyer's actually taken quite a substantial risk in transferring money.
Yeah.
And this owner's turned around and copped, you know, got offered $4,000 more. Now, fair play to the owner. He wants to make as much money as he can. But that to do a deal with someone and then back out of it like that, in my world, that's grubby.
Yeah, definitely.
That's filthy behaviour. I can't tolerate that. I've done this. I buy and sell cars a lot,
yep.
Parts a lot, and I've done deals with people. You know, and cars are, you know, cars and parts, when you're selling and people are travelling, obviously there's, you know, they deposit money into my account and it takes time to clear and I don't release the vehicle. This happened with the Triple S, actually. I sold the car, I agreed on a price. The guy transferred the money. Now, it wasn't going to be instant transfer. It's going to take a couple of days. And I said to him, that's fine. You can't pick the car up till the funds are clear. You know, that's just how it is. He agreed to that. Now, in that time, and I will take people's money or and deposits and whatever, I leave the ads up until the car's off my property.
Yeah.
I don't take the ads down because I've been screwed around so many times, it's ridiculous. So in the middle of all that, I had a phone call from a guy. Now, I'd obviously negotiate a deal that wasn't for asking price, but I was still happy with it, so it didn't matter to me. I got what I wanted for the car. I had someone ring and want to pay full asking price for the car.
Yep.
And I said, mate, I'm sorry, but the car's sold. The ad's still up. In the event the sale falls through, I'll keep you in the loop.
Yeah.
Absolutely. No, I'll come pick it up today and I'll pay asking price. I said, hey, I think you misheard me. The car's sold, pending pickup, funds are being transferred. If it falls over for whatever reason, I'll keep you in the loop.
Yeah, that's it. That's all you can expect.
And he just wasn't having it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to pay asking price. I said, no, it doesn't matter. A deal's a deal. You'll be losing money. I said, it doesn't matter. I'm not worried about losing money, mate. This bloke in good faith has paid me money. I'm going to honour that. And if that costs me $1,000, well, then so be it.
Your integrity's not for sale, you know.
Yeah,
and the other side, like we do the regretful sale thing, and we've all got those moments to reflect upon where we might have got more money, or you know, maybe shouldn't have sold the car or whatever. But those stories exist because we've done the right thing, you know.
Well, I'll tell you what, mate. I drove the Bluebird home from that film shoot with mixed emotions.
Yeah,
because all of a sudden I've got 20 people who wouldn't know one end of a car from the other,
yep,
telling me how awesome his car is and, you know, how cool it is to see something like that on the road still. And you drive home and the car performs faultlessly all day. I've had an issue with the throttle cable on it, and a couple of issues with the linkages on those carbies.
On the twins, yeah.
It performed flawlessly all day. It sat on 100 Ks on the freeway the whole way home. Yep. I was driving home. I was stopped at the servo at Eastlink to put some fuel in it on the way home, and I was just getting thumbs up, and you just kind of think, man, am I doing the right thing?
Yeah.
But, you know, I want to move on to something else, so it is what it is. But, the whole mixed emotions of selling, and then you sell and you wonder if you'd sold it too cheap. There's like a whole range of things that go on. But when you haven't work done on cars, and this, again, leads into the legends in our own lunchtimes group as well, where guys are doing stuff themselves, I find myself in that boat with as many things as I can possibly do.
Yep.
I do myself because I don't have the trust in businesses to be able to confidently, shops are pretty good at, and this is, I'm not bagging shops, but a lot of shops are pretty good at asking for money up front. And I understand they've got expenses to cover. That's fine.
Yep.
But, you know, you're taking a risk. You're dropping off your vehicle and you're also parting with substantial amounts of money. So I've been very wary of dealing with workshops. I was lucky. I'll shout out Bits of Italy in Dandenong that did the carby work on my car because of the time constraints I found myself under. Phil from Bits of Italy, he reconditioned those carbies for me anyway. Not only has he spent hours on the phone with advice, I dropped the car off. I rang him. I said, look, I need to get this done. This is a stage I'm at. I have just hit a wall and I don't have the time. He took the car.
Yep.
Drop it off tomorrow, Scotty. It's fine. So I dropped it off. He took the car. He did the job. He didn't ask for a cent until the car was finished.
Yep.
And I turned up there, you know, ready to go, ready to pay the man. You know, he did the work. He got paid. And, you know, I'll shout the guy out because good at what he does. And, you know, he wasn't the sort of guy that wanted. You know, it was a couple of thousand dollars too. It was a few thousand dollars worth of work. Anyone who's set up twin carbies knows what a money pit that is. And, he was really good about it. So, yeah, for every shop that's ripping people off, there are guys out there that are honourable people. So, yeah, I guess just choose very wisely and don't always go off social media and the Instagram.
Yeah.
Because quite often some of the shops that are, or some of the organisations or businesses that have got, and this is doesn't just go for cars, this goes in general.
Yep.
The glossy social media presence doesn't always belie quality workmanship.
No, absolutely doesn't.
4-star plus Google reviews are always a good indication, I'd reckon, for most things.
Yeah. Yes.
I want to touch on something. This is separate just before we leave our general business, but we did speak into the podcast about Samantha Murphy and the impact on the family. And while we're talking about a little bit of disgraceful behaviour on social media, which we raised pretty early in the piece, there's some big doses of humble pie going down right now, but some people have really got to think about themselves, you know, level and baseless accusations now that an arrest's been made. I'd hate to have those comments with my name attached still just living in those posts.
I text Mick yesterday and just said to him, look, mate, just know that it's not the majority that thought that. It's just your moron minority, for want of a better term.
Yeah. And everyone's got the potential to learn. A dear friend of our podcast actually commented something that he kind of really regrets that he had commented and had done it, but it's a learning curve for a few, I think, as well.
Yeah.
And as I said, yeah, you know, back when we last had a tragedy similar to that in this district, there was no social media.
No, that's
you could have
true.
A chat to your mate at the pub. You could talk about it bad amongst your family, but you couldn't just launch accusations into news postings.
That's the thing. You can think whatever you want, and people, it's nature to have doubts about things and people and go, I wonder if, but you don't have to fucking say it.
No.
It's super easy. I actually did see a bit of commentary around it, which I thought was pretty disgusting. A certain person took it upon herself to quote some domestic violence statistics to say that, you know, I can't quote it verbatim because I don't remember where I saw it, whether it was on Instagram or somewhere else. But it was like, you know, for argument's sake, it was 70% of women die at the hands of their partner or someone, a male known to them. So she was going down that track,
that it was
the husband because statistically 70% of men, and I just kind of thought, well, that's a bit rich, you know. A, she's been missing 24/7, she'd been missing less than 24 hours, so you really shooting your mouth off a bit early there.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not to say that, we don't know what happened. The police don't divulge their methodology or their operational matters because, you know, they've got a crime to solve. They do what they got to do.
Yep.
For all the people that sat around saying the coppers were doing nothing, pull your heads in, because you got no idea what goes on in an investigational situation. Just because the police presence isn't visible or the police aren't out there combing over every leaf in the forest, doesn't mean they're not putting the groundwork in. Clearly they were. They'd zeroed in on what they needed to zero in on, and they were doing what they had to do, and they got this bloke.
Got a result.
They're a week ahead of what we think they are.
Yeah, and a lot of people, mate, you know, even on the back of, you know, International Women's Day, like, you know, love our ladies. We've got plenty of ladies attached to our podcast, plenty of listeners, but people are trying to score points now, and, you know, people are saying women are in jeopardy every time they go for a run. Well, that's not the fucking world we live in. You know, this is just a random horrific act, but it doesn't mean
it is.
You know, it's not something to stop your life over.
No.
You know, so
let's be honest. No, it's a very rare occurrence.
Absolutely, it is. That's why, like, as I say, you know, we've got to reflect on this town. We're going back, you know, over two decades since we've had a similar occurrence.
Yeah.
So, you know.
You know, there's just a lot of comments. Again, it comes back to negative social commentary that, you know, I'm pretty sure that particular person wouldn't be quoting that sort of crap to the people involved's face.
No.
Again, people like that mate shoot their mouth off about that sort of stuff clearly have never been punched in the mouth at school.
Yeah.
Because that's what they do. But, you know, Mick and his family got a long road ahead now, because not only have they got to deal with the fact that Samantha unfortunately has been allegedly murdered.
Yeah.
They've got to process that. There's obviously everything that comes with the death of a loved one. There's a court case. There is, that'll be dragged out. You can bet your bottom dollar that'll be dragged out, drawn out process.
I think they're already talking August or something, next court appearance.
Yeah.
You know, right. So.
And the other implications are that the family of the accused, they didn't ask to be put in a situation. They're in it.
Yep.
You know, his parents, well known, I would suggest, you know, due to the father's AFL career, et cetera, et cetera. They're in a situation now where they are probably not going to be a welcome in Ballarat, I would imagine.
No, it's a change of name and move state type of deal.
We've got 100%.
Oh, we're pushing photos of the family home out there now. Like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. No, I saw that
last night.
Yeah,
the media's already And it, you know, this is why I dislike the media, right? This reason exactly, and I've got skin in the game in this at a personal level, but they opposed the gag order. So the guy got arrested. You know, we won't spend too much time on this, but I think it needs to be said. The guy was arrested. His name was basically up in lights from the get-go. Yeah. How that got into media, I don't know. Then it went to court. There was a gag order issued. So then stories were edited, things were appealed off social media. And this is a problem with a 24-hour news cycle. Everything's instantaneous. So the police and the legal system don't have a lot of time on their hands to do their due diligence before someone in the media has blabbed it all over social media, whereas before when it was print media, they probably had a bit more time on their hands.
Yep.
Gag orders issued. The media's then, you know, pulled their heads in to a degree, done what they have to do. And I'm not bagging the media. They've got a game to play too, but, you know, the common decency and respect's gone out the window. And then we see that yesterday I looked at a few of the stories and now we've got photos of the house. His house, now the accused and his partner are house-sitting a house somewhere in that Ballarat area.
Yeah.
They've got photos of the house, photos of his partner's car in the driveway. They've got all this stuff. So the media themselves are instigating a vigilante-style response to it because they're the ones that are going around talking about the accused family, talking about where they live, what they do, who they are, you know, people who aren't involved in it, you know, the guy's house sitting, the people who own that house have got nothing to do with it. But their house is all over the front page of the paper.
Yep.
You know, where does it end? And I really feel for the accused.
I spoke to a friend who knows.
I
spoke to a friend who knows the family and considers them to be a lovely family, and like this was unexpected, totally unexpected by the lad to do that. And I don't know. So that sort of offset the balance a little bit. But yeah, and again, it's the same shit again. If you don't know, just fucking keep out of it. You know,
It's just I really feel for Mick and his family, and I feel for the accused family as well because they obviously weren't aware of it, and obviously, you know, it comes from a good family, and it doesn't matter what background you come from, right? If you've got a family member that's done something like this, you know, that's got a massive knock-on effect, and I really feel for them, and that's a mental health thing as well. So
yeah, and this is I've been 22. My parents had absolutely zero control over the person I was at 22. You know, people always wonder when a kid does something bad, where were the parents? Well, did the parents know? How involved were the fucking parents? You know, like often. I mean, you go down to a certain age, I guess it's a difference, but, you know, I was 13 sneaking out the frigging window of the house. So
if our parents...
We've all been there. We've all done it.
Yeah.
Obviously, we haven't done anything this extreme, but, look, I'm glad that there's been progress. I wouldn't call it a resolution, progress. And I hope that she's located and laid to rest with the dignity that she deserves.
Absolutely.
And I hope people just lay off Mick and his family, and also just let due process take its course. That's something that worldwide, when things have happened, due process seems to go out the window and we all just start going on the attack as a society, and I think that's pretty rude. So let's just let due process run its course.
Yep.
And let the judicial system do what it needs to do.
Yeah, because we want that trial to happen here, or, you know, in Victoria at least. We don't want him all of a sudden, because there's so much shit on the media, he can't get a fair trial, we've got to bounce him somewhere else for the court case.
Well,
you know, or whatever.
You can bet your bottom dollar they might, they'll play that card.
Yeah, I've got no doubt at all they'll play that card. Well,
so
let's move along, I reckon. What do you reckon we go into this?
We've got a mad to review. Let's have a crack, eh?
We do.
On a lighter note. But
It's our birthday month too, mate. Plenty of legends are born in bloody March, but the March 2024 Street Machine magazine, bud.
Yes, yeah, we do.
Well, this is your first mag review in the co-hosting role, mate. Do you want to lead us into this one?
I will lead in. On a personal level, age 10. In Newsfront, Henry's Dream. So I grew up in western suburbs of Sydney, but I moved to Canberra quite some time ago and spent quite a few years living in the ACT and loved it. It's my favourite place.
Yep.
I now live in Victoria, but I spent a great portion of my time living in Canberra. It's a great city. Really enjoyed living there. Lovely people. It's a great place.
Yep.
Now, Chick Henry, obviously, is a Canberra local as well. There is a political party in Canberra known as the Belco Party. Now, the ACT governance is a lot different to the other states in Australia, obviously, because it's a territory.
Yep.
So we don't they don't have local councils in Canberra, which is a good thing because councils are a waste of time.
Yep.
Shout out to Casey Council that does nothing. you know, the rates you pay down here in Victoria, I pay over $2,000 a year to live in the city of Casey, and, mate, the lawns at the local park are knee high, so do something about it, guys, because I'm getting sick of forking out for nothing.
Yep.
Here in Canberra, the Belco Party is committing to a $100 million motorsport complex in the ACT in honour of Chick Henry. Chick Henry did dabble in politics in the ACT. This is something that swirled around Canberra on and off over the years since the closure of the drag strip. They ran supercar event there, the GMC 400. That wasn't really a success. And Canberra's love affair, obviously Summernats has been in Canberra since its inception.
Yep.
And these guys are looking to get some funding together and take a proposal to the ACT government for a motorsport precinct. I think that's a fantastic thing. I'm obviously not born and raised in Canberra, but I was a proud Canberran when I lived there, and I still am. So I think it's a good thing for the area. There's been a lot of negative feedback in the media regarding motorsport venues. Pheasant Wood in Goulburn, the other track in Goulburn that slipped my mind. So, you know, there's two tracks in Goulburn that have been, you know, running, then closed, then under redevelopment. There's been a lot of conjecture and discussion around Heathcote drag strip down here in Victoria. Also in with whatever is any investment ever going to be made in Calder Park.
We had an opportunity here too to do something very similar in Ballarat, but we've got a council that lives in denial of its car culture. Ballarat's just off its head for cars, but we could have, you know, created the motorsport park here too and really tied it all back together. But, you know, our council was slow to act or unwilling to act.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, no. I grew up in western suburbs of Sydney, and I was fortunate enough to live within 15 minutes drive from Oran Park, which is now housing estate. That was sad, but it was also progress. And Amaru Park went the same way. And, you know, we've all seen that over Australia. We've seen circuits get you know, pulled down and you know, replaced with housing. It is what it is. I'm actually surprised Calder Park's lasted as long as it has down here. The mind boggles as to how that hasn't been pulled down. But good on the Jane family for hanging on to it. And hopefully they do invest in it, because it is a good event, a good space.
I tell you what, it'd be an expensive site cleanup though when it comes to every buried tyre on that property.
I was going to say something about buried things out there, but
I'm obviously not being from Victoria, I don't know much about the construction of it. But as a kid, you know, I used to watch the Thunderdome, and there'd be 100,000 people in that place on a Saturday afternoon watching the Oscars. And
yeah, well, that's where it's built on.
To move to Victoria, one of the first things I did when I moved to Victoria was drove out there, because I was working at the airport.
Yeah.
And I just took the long way home one day and went for a run out there, and I just thought, Jesus, a shadow of its former existence, you know. It's really sad.
Yeah, I swear it's built. The majority of that's built out of tyres. So,
majority is buried tyres. We better be careful. Well,
it's interesting, but there's a lot of conjecture about motorsport. I think the New South Wales government, and obviously I'm just an observer, the New South Wales government with Sydney Motorsport Park has done a reasonable job. I understand Parramatta Speedway, when it got pulled down, they built a new one out in that precinct as well. I haven't been to Sydney for a number of years, but there's a bit of conjecture over how that is operating. It'd be nice to see something in Canberra get up. Wakefield Park is the track that I couldn't think of. Wakefield Park is undergoing some redevelopment.
Yep.
There's some money being tipped into that, which is good to see, because between Sydney and Melbourne, there's quite a few racetracks. They're not obvious. You know, you got Winton. There's another one around Albury somewhere. There's quite a few regional motorsport facilities, but to see something in the nation's capital,
yep,
would be really good. There's a big catchment around Canberra. People coming in from the central western New South Wales, the southern highlands, coming up from the southern tablelands, you know, around Albury, Wodonga, that area,
yep,
into Canberra to use the facility. So
that,
I think it's a good thing.
You know,
how that's going to go with the ACT government, who is more concerned with light rail systems and rainbow roundabouts and things of that nature, I don't know. But I'll tell you what, they got my support.
Yep.
And I'd like to see it happen. Canberra is very underutilized. They've got an awesome airport. The airport there's state of the art. Why on God's green earth we haven't got international flights in and out of Canberra is just something that boggles the mind. So there is a lot of facilities in the ACT that could support a motorsport facility. And I'd really like to see them get onto it. So if you live in the ACT and you listen to this, just and you're in Belconnen, get behind the Belco party. Go and have a talk to these guys and see what they're about. It's great that they've got some coverage in a magazine. I think it's really important.
Yeah, no, definitely. I totally agree, mate. You got a top card, bud?
I do. just let me pull my notes here.
Yeah, no, that's all right.
Page 34, the Pink XA Fairmont.
I love that you got that. Yep, yep.
Ashley Bell's XA Fairmont. Now, I'm led to believe, and I've read the story. I haven't done a lot of background. In the magazine, it turned up last night, so I haven't done a lot of background.
Yeah, I totally understand.
I'm led to believe that Ashley's partner, Michael, is the owner of, and if I've got this wrong, I apologize, but I'm pretty sure he's the owner of the XB GS sedan GS Hoon. That car's been around for a very, very long time. I have seen that blue GS Hoon around for many, many years in the New South Wales street machine scene.
April 2015, it was in the magazine, apparently.
Okay, there you go. So it was that's a well-turned-out car. And he knows what he's doing. I had a look at this car. Ashley's XA is fantastic. It's really well turned out. The paintwork is stunning. The fit and finish is amazing on it. And
love the trim.
It's not a GT clone.
No, absolutely.
It's an XAGS. Now, in Fords, you don't see a lot of XAGS has been celebrated. This is an XAGS Fairmont. That's what it's been built as.
Yep.
I think that's really, really cool that we don't have yet another GT clone. It's a GS Fairmont. It's had a wind-back sunroof put in it. A couple of things I will point out. She's driven the build of this the whole way, and one interesting point is the seats. The tartan.
Yeah, I love the tartan.
Fabric on the seats and on the floor.
Yep.
The carpet. I don't know whether it's mats or actual carpet. I mean, in the Elite Hall, I couldn't get close enough to it to sort of investigate that, but that tartan fabric, she actually had made herself. Yep. So she designed the pattern and she had that fabric made.
That's cool.
That look is a very that jazzy is really green cool. feel.
Got a jazzy green feel it to it. Yeah, yep. Definitely.
Yeah, and you know, I think that's it's an absolute credit to her.
Yeah.
To have a car that's just an elite level build that is not a GT clone, and it just ticks a lot of boxes to me. One thing I have to laugh about the story is that the car started as a two-owner Pottery Beige six-cylinder Fairmont.
Yep.
I couldn't think of anything more boring in my entire life than a brown XA Fairmont, right?
Yep.
She's taken a two-owner car that had all the original paperwork, sales receipts, logbooks. So a purist wet dream, if you will.
Yep, yep.
It was a good, clean, straight to own a vehicle, and they've turned it into this. Now, she said here, so many people begged us to leave it alone or buy a rusty shell or a project car. We didn't want something we were going to strip back and find a wreck underneath. Fair play to her.
Yep.
We've all been there. And we may have upset a few purists and past owners, but I think we've given the car the justice it deserves. Now, this kind of harks back to a point I made last episode with buy-in price of starting points for projects and why cars of this year are there's a high buy-in price. What they've done by starting with the two-owner purist car is they've saved themselves a boatload of cash and a boatload of effort in repairing damage, rust, past mistakes, etc.
Yeah.
And the end result, mate, the world doesn't need another Brown Falcon. So
no.
The end result speaks for itself.
And it nearly comes onto that rock solid to rock three build as well. You know, why build another car when you've been so deep into the car that you've done? You know, like it's easy to revamp at that point. So
100%. And you know what you're working with. And there's no nasty surprises. So there is a lot to be said for grabbing a car that is in really good shape and just going to town on it. So, you know, I don't see that as being a bad thing at all. And let's face it, you have to look back at the 70s and early 80s colour palettes that were available and wonder who sat in a showroom and told a salesman with a straight face, "I'd like it in brown, please."
Mate, at an XY, we used to call plastic football brown, the old XY colour. But, yeah, I mean, it was a cool thing too. And
I'd love to know those people that bought Datsun 120 wires, Toyota early KE30 Corollas, Gallants, et cetera, that ordered them in that poo mustard brown with the contrasting brown interior and thought that was a good look.
Yeah, absolutely. No, exactly.
Do you know how many cars I've knocked back buying because they're that colour? Because you just, oh, this is a really clean car. You should take a look at it. And you go, yeah, it's brown. Forget it.
Not doing
no
it.
No chance.
Yep.
No, I'm not doing it because that's a full strip down and respray to eradicate that. And forget it. Not interested.
Yeah,
so well played to them. It's a really great car.
Did you have any other top cars, mate, or that was your main one?
Yeah, no. I do. I've got a few top cars. Apologies for being a bit indulgent with this issue.
Yeah, well, and again, 42. You only got it at 11 o'clock frigging last night and you're up it. So good work.
I was up early this morning because the young bloke was awake, so I took the opportunity to write some quick notes.
Yeah, I definitely had myself onto page 42 as a third pick. So, yeah, that'll give you a bit of an indication.
Now, this was in the Elite. I don't know if I posted photos of this, but this is in the Elite Hall at Summonats as well, and it deserved to be there, and I don't, you know, agree with anyone who says otherwise.
Yep.
This car, again, these guys are from Lithgow, New South Wales, Central West, so a lot of tough machinery out in the Central West of New South Wales, and this car's no exception. There's a couple of key things I would like to point out about this car. They'd actually restored it. They bought the car, they'd restored it.
Yep.
And then they pulled it apart and did this to it. So a couple of key points to this car. It's got a supercharged, it's the original BMC, well, it's not the original engine, but it's a BMC A-series engine.
Yep.
Which is also the basis of the Datsun A-series engines. They pulled the motor out of a Austin Healey Sprite, I'm pretty sure.
Yep.
Now, they have supercharged it. This is a thing in Britain. It's what they do over there. They do supercharge these engines. They've done that. It's next level, the detail and fit and finish on this car. But one thing I will point out, if you look at that firewall shot, and Moses, this is up your alley with the ear the Nash comes from,
yep,
is the lever arm shock absorbers.
Yeah, got them, yep.
On the firewall.
Yep.
So they are... I think I've seen two examples of lever arm shockers in my life, and that was in a Morris.
Yeah.
That was a former Paddock Basher many moons ago, and also in a Hillman Minx.
Yep.
Must have been a Pommy thing. But what we picked up on last episode was that Street Machine has pioneered featuring small cars.
Yeah.
Japanese cars, four cylinders in their magazine.
Yep.
I can almost guarantee there will be some sort of commentary as to why this is even grace in the pages.
Yeah.
But it deserves to be there. And again, it's different and it shows that, you know, Mate, the diversity of the diversity of elite cars, right? So elite cars have started to evolve. You've looked at, we've all seen all the elite builds, all the big name cars that have been, over the years of the Elite 60 and Grand Champion, etc., have generally been American or Australian rear-wheel drive muscle cars. Obviously, we touched on, you know, there's been a few elite builds that have been, you know, Japanese-based.
Yep.
But to see this in the Elite Hall, it deserves to be there. It's well turned out. It's a great concept. They've done a really good job on it. Yeah. And you know.
Yeah. Dear mate and co-builder of the 48 Nash Ambassador of mine, Gerald Clancy, had one of these pretty recently. It had rego and everything. He was just running it out for Smoko every now and again, and I could have bought it for $850. So you can still buy a cheap Murray to kick off as well, and then invest your money in the build. You know, they're not priced. Yes. They're not tapped out for price. So
and the beauty of I don't really know much about the Morrises because I'm not really into Pommy cars. Like the only Pommy cars I really into are Escorts, Cortinas. But you know, after being around Datsuns for a while, a lot of guys run the Datsun A series engines in the Morris, in the British stuff. There's a lot of guys running them in MGs, etc. So, you know, that from what I understand, the platform lends itself to significant modification, not unlike a Volkswagen Beetle of the same era. So, yeah. You know, for someone who wants to go custom but doesn't have the budget for a massive, you know, like for an American car,
yep.
You know, there's no reason why you couldn't go custom with a Murray.
Yeah, that's it.
You know, yeah. they got a very similar shape to a Humpy Holden.
Yep.
You know, if you look at the roof line and the rear quarter panels on them, they're quite the they lend themselves to the custom car building of that year, if you're that way inclined.
Yeah.
My high school web metalwork teacher actually drove one.
Yep.
Completely unrestored, but had a significant amount of engineering work in it.
Yep.
It's a cool thing, and I just thought it was great. But I did hear a couple of, you know, there was a couple of dickheads up there that just were like, "Oh, what's that shitbox doing in here?" And you just go, "Well, hang on, mate. You got to appreciate the work, not the platform." So
yeah, and it's interesting too for a take on an elite build where it hasn't done a whole heap of deletion. You know, we haven't deleted door handles and we haven't smoothed. You know, it's got stuff bolted onto it as opposed to stuff deleted from it, and it works.
Well, I mean, reading the story, it's actually got a Continental kit fitted to it. You know, like with the spare wheel sitting in a vertical position behind the bar and all that. Yeah, it has had stuff added.
Yeah.
Which so you don't need to just take to a car with an angle grinder and a welder and fill every single hole to make a statement.
No, absolutely you don't. No, I love it, mate.
I mean, our cover car, Grand Champion, deserves every minute in the spotlight. When you see that car in the flesh and see the size of those rear quarter panels,
yeah.
And the fact that a lot of that fabrication is just out of this world. The front's been lengthened, you know, that's a really cool car, that Charger. I didn't pick it as my top car because, you know, it's the cover car and it deserves to be there and it's a Grand Champion and it deserves to be there.
And brought to a spot.
But I wanted to highlight.
And brought to us by Simo as well into this magazine, so that's cool.
Simo the Major's written a story. Great. He can put together a good informative article. I'll touch on his other article a bit later as well because I thought that was very good.
Yeah, no worries at all.
Can I make a comment on the cover itself?
Yeah, yeah.
That sword is giving me anxiety, leaning up against the Chico.
You wouldn't want it to slip and fall, would you?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, no, I'm feeling it.
Yeah. Maybe it's photoshopped in.
No,
He did it. Well, when he won Grand Champion, he dropped a skid in it, so he's not really afraid to have a crack at it. Yeah, you know?
Cool. And Grand Champion involves a whole heap of driving.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, mate, the car's amazing. I didn't have it as top pick because I figured that, you know, it was probably the obvious choice, and I kind of tend to dig into the less obvious sort of things.
Well, you know me well enough too, Skinny. Like those big stories will always get told. They don't necessarily need my attention. You know, I do love the car. I really admire the build. It's awesome.
Thumbs up to Simo for doing the write up on it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, he can spin a good yarn on paper, so I know he's very good. I like his writing style; it's really good. I'm glad he he did the cover feature, and that's great for him.
And humble to the point of really appreciative of the opportunity to do that. You know, like he's on the record. He's on the record, you know. I'm going to take us somewhere different again. I'm going to go to page 112 because as my top car, I've gone with Caden Berry and the 46 Chevy Hot Rod. But again, it was the story. It was the fact that, you know, what fuel tank fell out and it caught fire and, you know, like, but he still trailered it up, got it up to the event, up to Summernats, and people were pretty much dropping donations into the car. The motor that's rolling there was donated to the project as well, but just that community support around the car. But it's just, it's tough as. And, yeah, with the blown 202, love it. So, young gun, Caden Berry, I'm giving you the shout-out at 19, mate, for that truck. But his old man's got a workshop and they've kind of built it together. But it's an amazing little story when you read through it and just feel. But, yeah, what was it? It wasn't just cash donations. We heard you ended up with a free engine. Yes, and that still blows me away even today. Emma Louise has a 202 VK and she's said she wanted to give me one of her spare engines to help me get it back on the road. Long story short, by the end of the weekend, she decided that instead of giving me a spare, she literally pulled the hot 202 out of her VK at Rocky and we put it in the back of the Chev to take home. I truly can't thank her enough for that. So, yeah, so it was the Rocky Nats it got to. Yeah, Rocky Nats 3.
If that gesture right there doesn't epitomise what this is all about,
yeah,
then I don't know what is.
Yeah, no, blew my mind that. And I also went to page 106 too for the AP with the Hemi in it. Oh, buddy Barney taught me this shit too, the difference between, it's an AP5 on page 112. Yep. Sorry, what was it? 106, Scotty. Yeah, but just love that for something different. Been rubbed down with a bit of Penetrol. Just wanted to preserve the buddy. Yeah, preserve what was there. That's a cool thing. And he had an LS in his last car and copped a bit of shit for it. But, yeah, we're running the Dodge Hemi in this one. And, yeah, she's a cool thing. So I was definitely stretching the definitions of top car and thinking outside the box.
I don't think it's a stretch. I mean, top car.
It's whatever appeals to you directly. Again, and the reasons behind
different things to different people, right?
Yeah.
If we're all picking the same car as top car, it's not going to be an exciting conversation, is it?
No. And that story done by Jack O'Hoolahan too, it's a good read and so it brings you closer to the car, which I always appreciate that. But, she's a cool thing. So there you go.
I did want to touch on Simo's article on page 90, them's the brakes.
We get to that in honourable mentions, mate. I should have printed you off the criteria because, remember, next we go to the in the build section and we pick our favourites from there and we drop our honourable mentions at the end. Let's come back to
Simo's because I want to talk about that from another standpoint. I've
got this piece of paper here that has everything listed in the order of the way we go through our mag review.
Well, you could have sent it to me.
Trying to tune you in. I thought he would have been. He's an avid listener before he become part of the process. But the in the build section.
Yeah, copping the late deliveries.
I'll show you the way we do it. We go top car and then we go the in the build, or best of the builds, as AO called it, Reader's Pride, and then we go the Sunday Sesh, then we go the Tough Shot, and then we go all our honourable mentions tacked on the end.
I've got some notes on in the build, so I did have a bit of time to prepare over a cup of tea this morning before we got in here.
Yeah,
so.
No, I love your work. Page 124 is roughly the vicinity, because that's the one that I've
124. Okay, so I do have some notes here. So I've got three vehicles that I really want to touch on.
Yeah, there's two of them on page 127, I already know.
Yeah, yeah. How'd you guess? So Brandon Paul's Nissan Bluebird, surprise, surprise, is probably my top pick.
Yeah, it's cool, as.
I haven't met Brandon, but obviously the Bluebird community is rather small. Yep. So I haven't met him, but I've spoken to him. We've talked cars. We've sort of shared a bit of info back and forth. And we kind of dig each other's cars here. So he's got a couple of different things on this car that may not be obvious. Is the front bumpers off actually off an N12 P Pulsar, I'm pretty sure. So to give it that lower front spoiler.
Yep.
He's also attached a lip to it. It's got a set of side skirts on it. It's got some cool wheels on it. And it's just it's a really cool cruiser.
Running some R31 Skyline coilovers on the front and reset leaves.
Yes.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, which is suspension parts for Bluebirds are hard to come by in Australia. You know, they've just dried up. A lot of that stuff's dried up. Like, you used to be able to, they were common swap. And, a lot of Bluebirds were cannibalized for their 2-liter engines, 5-speed gearboxes, rack and pinion steering, and their front suspension to be retrofitted into older Datsuns.
Yep.
So that's why a lot of Bluebirds haven't survived, because a lot of that stuff was just culled out of cars and cannibalized out of cars. Bluebirds rust. They're just a horrendous rust trap.
Yep.
Like a lot of Japanese cars of that era. So they, you know, the ones that were rusty and mechanically sound were just cannibalized for their bits. So as time moves on, Bluebird front ends are really hard to get. So the common sort of thing is to go with the R31 Skyline stuff, which is what he's done. My car's all factory in the front end. It's just really low.
Yep.
If I do keep the car, I'll probably be moving to coilovers all round. That's going to be custom set up for the rear, because no one actually makes anything for the wagons for the leaf springs. So yep. It'll be interesting to see how that comes out. But, yeah, that was one of my picks, obviously. I've got to fly the Bluebird flag there.
Yep.
And then Kane Moeller's Datsun 1600. If you think, you know, anyone who thinks Datsun thinks 1600, they were an icon. They were the car that put Datsun on the map in Australia. You look at what was available in 1968 with overhead cam, disc brakes, and a 4-speed floor shift gearbox.
Yep.
And 4-wheel independent rear suspension. Really, you only had a Datsun, a BMW 2002, or a 1602, or a Fiat, or an Alfa Romeo. So for its price, the Datsun brought a lot of features to the Australian market that nothing else locally available really had, and they're a success on the back of that. They're a great rally car, a lot of motorsport around the world, very competitive.
510?
But
does 510 relate to that, the model series 510?
Yes. So 510, the Datsun 1600, so basically they're all Bluebirds.
Yeah.
So you got your 410 was early 60s, was sold here as the Datsun Bluebird. Then they went to the Datsun 1600.
Yep.
Which is the 510. Known overseas as a Bluebird, known in Australia as a 1600.
Known by Mike Finnegan as a 510. I see his latest video.
510, yeah.
Done the pickup on the 510 coupe. Did we get a 2-door version of that car here?
No, we got a 4-door. We got a 4-door sedan and a 4-door wagon. 4-door wagon, leaf spring rear end. 4-door sedan, semi trailing arm. Rear end in them with uni joints, not CVs.
Yep.
As most Datsuns of that era had, 240Ks, 240Zs, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah.
So overseas, in Papua New Guinea and Asia, and I don't know about the UK, but they got a 2-door sedan.
Yep.
And then there was a 2-door coupe, which was only available in right-hand drive markets.
Yep.
And they're highly sought after. Different engines fitted for different markets. You know, Japan, they come out with 1.8s. Not, well, they were known as a 1600 here because they had a 1600cc engine.
Yeah, yeah.
But they had 1300cc engines up to 1800, depending, you know, twin carbies, et cetera, et cetera. There was a 1600 SSS, not sold in Australia. And then, so 510, then you move to 180, what was known in Australia as a 180B, is a 610.
Yep.
We didn't get the 710 in Australia, which is known as a Violet, Datsun Violet. That was actually the basis of the Nissan rally cars. And then 810s, your 200B, and then the Bluebird's known as a 910.
Yeah, there you go.
And the Bluebird is the last of that platform. The 910 ran to 1985 in Australia, but actually finished production in Japan in 83. And then, you know, they moved on to the R31 Skyline in Japan in 83.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool to see a 1600 in here. That's got a looks like a SSS grill in it, and it's got an SR20 and it's a pretty stout little car. So, yeah.
Well, I'm going back, like, just a quick flashback to me name checking Mike Finnegan, but his video with that 510 coupe that he's bought, and it harks back to an earlier time in his world. So in a world where he's building a real high-end Cadillac fucking Pro Tourer, and he's got, you know, Blasphemy and everything, the amount of love he's got for that little Dado, and the thing, the whole engine bay catch, all the wiring burns out in the engine bay, they're sitting at the servo on the ground trying to re-wrap the loom, bump into a bloke with an earlier Dado convertible as well, who goes home and gets them some relays and bits and pieces to get on the road, and it just stretches out. It just looks painful, like the whole process. But no one can tell him not to like that car, you know. Like, it's just...
There's a massive market for... Well, I don't know what they sold them as in the States, whether they were sold as a Bluebird or they were just sold as a 510. I couldn't tell you off the top of my head.
Yeah, it's got 510, and they keep referring to it as a 510. So
They call it a 510 over there. A lot of guys in the Bluebird scene refer to them as 910s, but when you start saying that, people just have no idea what you're talking about. So mine's just – I just refer to mine as a Bluebird because that's what it is. But in the US is a huge market for Datsuns in the US. So – 510s and 240, 260 Zs.
Yep.
280 Zs, not so much because they were getting a bit fat and slow by that stage. But there's a lot of huge market for Datsuns in the US. Massive. Like, it's unbelievable the amount of cars on the road over there, but also the market is huge. Particularly for Z cars. Z cars were a massive seller in the States.
Yeah. Yeah.
And rotaries as well. There was quite a market for rotaries in the US. So, and they got a lot of stuff that the rest of the world didn't get, like the RX3 station wagon and the what's known as a Mazda Repu, it's basically a Mazda 1500, what we had in Australia, but with a rotary engine in it. That was done factory in the States. So,
mate, I was studying this magazine that hard last night. I had a bloody dream about an R100. Like,
there you go.
Fucking ludicrous. Dreaming Mazdas. I don't know how that came about.
You want to hear about my dream?
Oh, go for it, Scotty.
No, you don't.
You're going to start a dream.
Is it for this time slot?
No,
good. There you go. I'm going to pull us to one.
The other car that I wanted to...
Oh, yep.
The other car I wanted to quickly shout out in the build, because I have been a bit indulgent, Dylan Fields Ford Anglia.
Yeah, well, I've got that down anyway. That was my main pick.
This is cool.
Yeah.
It's got a Toyota 1UZ V8 in it.
Yep.
Turboed. For those that don't know, they're the engine that was available in the Lexus LS400 that sold in Australia in the early 90s. Quad cam V8. The guys in the skid factory put one of these in a Fairlane with a turbo on it, made a shitload of power. I've seen these in hot rods. I've seen these in, you know, muscle cars. They're quite a good engine and not a bad platform for boost. So, yeah, really good. Really good build.
Yeah.
The motor will be good for around 1,500 horsepower. So, you know, anyone who's of the mindset that you need an LS to make or a Barra to make really good power out of a platform, have a look around at these Toyotas.
Yeah.
Even if you go on the skid factory and look at the
Fairlane build.
Well, the Fairlane build and the Hakkasuka Skyline they did with the Nissan V8 in it. Look, Al goes into quite a bit of technical detail about those engines, and it's a really interesting watch. So,
I rate that. And I shout the Anglia out too, because I think that's one of those things that you're not fighting the competition to buy one. You know, you'd find one of them fairly available, fairly affordable, you know, and I'll always go that way when there's an opportunity to. So,
yeah.
Moving on to Reader's 100%. Pride, I've got us at page 137. In a world of custom type street machine builds and everything, I just couldn't look past the hatchback because when I read the story, it all made a whole heap of sense. But now I can't find 137, and Scotty's already there. I'm getting there. So John Blundell, Alex Tarana, back in 87 when I was 6 years old, I got home from school one afternoon to find a bright green Alex Tarana SS parked in the driveway. Dad was standing there with his camera and a smile on his face, took a few quick pictures, and then it was off for a drive around the block. I knew right then that this car was to be mine when I was old enough to drive, which finally happened in 99 when I turned 18. Mate,
of mine was a painter, so we rubbed the car back, took the stripes off, gave it a fresh coat of 2K paint, looked great until it got backed into, decided to then going to do a full resto on the car, rebuild the 253, wasn't going to break any speed records, but it moves along okay, so it's still got the M20, still running the banjo, fixed all the little dents and rusty spots, then prime block back, repainted in Panama green, retrimmed the seat. So it's sort of, yeah, it's pretty much stock spec, but rolling on those cool hot wires that I love seeing on them. And, yeah, just a big connection to the family, the fact that that six-year-old kid now owns that car. Look.
Yeah, 100% on the money. when I look at that,
yep.
I just see reflections of my childhood because that's what was driving around.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, was a LH, LX, Taranas with hot wires on them, whether they were A9X, you know, with the big flares and the SLR 5000 across the boot lid,
yep.
Or the SS hatchback.
Yep.
They were cars like, when I think about cars in the 80s when I was a kid, definitely Taranas with SLR 5000 or in the big on the bottom lower flank of the doors and on the wing and hot wires. It's just like, just a combo. Like Tirana and hot wires, it's just,
yeah,
it's just one of those things.
The old boy went the US hot wires on his A9X, pretty much 3 weeks after he bought it, but those more fine spoke ones. But that Fiat Arbath too, I was a fan of that.
So was I. I had that down. that's, again, you know, bit of diversity there. You know, there's a significant amount of modification work in that car too. Like they've binned the leaf springs and put control arm front end in it.
Nicky engine. Fiat Nicky engine.
Those that may remember the ill-fated Nicky 650 that was sold here in Australia in the early 90s. On the Fiat.
Nicky 6, fucking shout out, Motley Crue. Yeah, no, I was a fan of that.
I wonder how he felt about that. So this is... Just cool. And they've done a lot of work on the car. You read the blurb there. There's been a lot of rust work, a lot of panel work done on it. And I like the jacked open engine cover. I reckon that's a really cool touch.
Yeah, I think so too. I couldn't help but shout out the ZC Fairlane up there too, just because it's staunch, tough, pretty traditional street machine build. So
I do have a thing for I've got a bit of a thing for Fairlanes, and there's something cool about. Ford Fairlane, any era. My favourite is the ZA.
I'm on the record like saying I love ZAs that much. I'd cross the street to spit on a ZB.
Yeah,
because I can only really pick them by the tail lights myself, so they lure me in every now and again. ZBs, but I do love ZAs.
I love a ZA. I like the galaxy style tail lights on them. You know that I just think they're cool, and there's something cool about a fun big V8 with a column change automatic.
Yeah, and they just look like they're just a big Falcon. They just look like a big Falcon. You know, like they're not overblown. The ZA, you know, it just looks like a stretched XR.
My other favorite is a ZJ, which is the XD's counterpart.
But
I prefer the LTD tail lights, the factory. Blacked out tail lights on them look really, really good.
Yeah.
I like the LTD, but the front styling on the LTD, I reckon, missed the mark. The ZJ with the quad headlights just kind of really works. Any other picks you got there for Reader's Rockets, mate?
No, mate. I'm quite happy to move straight onto the Sunday sesh. All right.
Well, I've got a couple of picks for Reader's. So my picks were the Fiat, the Fairlane, and I just want to touch on page 135, Tony Purcell's Gallant.
I thought you might go there.
You know me too well.
It happened fast.
It's got a Mang V6 in it with a 5-speed and a Skyline R31 rear end. Yep. He's throwing his thing together and he just drives the wheels off it. So good. And it's a Gallant and I don't know. I like the shape of him.
Yeah.
I like the shape of that era Gallant. I think it's a GC, that one. So cool.
Yep.
Again, there's a car that is an entry point for him to get into the sport, and he can just go and fang the crap out of it and not have it break the bank if something does go wrong.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah, no, exactly.
You know.
You got to
kind of celebrate that.
That Mustang down the bottom there with the blacked out chrome and stuff too. It's a cool looking car, but you can't pick everything in the book. So
I'll ask you this, Moses: did you ever think you'd see the day when it was a more appealing financial decision to buy a 60s Mustang than it would be to buy an XY Falcon?
No. Everyone I know was selling Falcons to buy Mustangs. Everyone I know was selling Monaros to buy bloody Camaros, you know, like back in the days
of unique cars. What was it? Remember that other car magazine? Because you had like Deals on Wheels, a truck magazine, right, with all the photos of trucks in it for sale. That was like color cover with a black and white insert.
Yeah, yeah.
You had unique cars. There was another one for cars. I can't remember the title. But you'd go through that as a kid. I'd go through that, and you'd see, particularly it seemed in Victoria, there was a lot more American muscle cars in Victoria that were being converted to ride and drive than anywhere else in Australia.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there was Mustangs were always expensive. Like you'd look at a Mustang, and back then I'm talking early 90s, you were looking at 67 Mustangs for sort of $25,000-$30,000 at the time, which was a lot of money. And then
yeah,
the old man, like my old man, you know, we'd look at it and go, oh, that XYGT is only $9,000.
Yeah.
But the Mustang equivalent, which is a 302 and not as fast and, you know, doesn't have the muscle factor that a GT Falcon probably does for an Australian person anyway, is a dear car. Why would you waste your time? You've got to convert them and all that. Too much money in it.
Yeah. Well, Denny
does. Fast forward 20 years.
Yeah.
And the Mustang is a better financial decision
than
I never thought I'd see the day where that was a case. But
even Denny Dave in here in the last episode talking about the ESPs, Fairmont Gears and stuff, and the cost of those. And back then you could buy an XAGT for $7,000 if you wanted one. You know, like $20,000 for an XD or, you know, $7,000 for an XAGT.
We covered that on Sleepover Stories when I did my first episode, where I had the opportunity to buy an XE ESP. It wasn't an original 351 car. It was a silver over grey. I'm pretty sure from memory, it's a long time ago, I think that car was a six-cylinder.
Yep.
And the motor had been ripped out, and he'd put a 351 in it, and it was out of a Fairlane. He'd actually bought a Fairlane and just transferred the driveline into the ESP.
Yeah.
And it had B45 Simmons on it. It needed work. It was no show car. It was an ESP that hadn't been touched. All he'd done is swap the driveline in and was selling a car. And it was $9,000. And I was a young bloke. I had a bit of cash. And I made arrangements via the trading post to go and look at it.
Yep.
And I got called out. I was a bit of a junkie for the overtime. So I got called out for work. So I called him and said, look, I'll reschedule. And I never did.
Yep.
I needed to buy the car.
Yeah.
And then, you know, 10 years later, they're changing hands for six figures. And I've got to say, some of the cars that are changing hands for big money still need big money spent on them. They're not turnkey, of these things that are changing hands for significant amounts of cash.
Absolutely. Yeah, no. Well, take us to the Sunday.
Right, where are we heading next, mate, after Reuters Rockets?
We go Sunday Too Far Away, which is on page 142. But I'm going for 143. I'm shouting out Tim Barnett with JJ's truck down there. That's the bloke that handed me the Richmond stubby holder the other day too, Scotty, I was relaying that story to. But that's shot at Patina Breakdown, which still pulls the heartstrings. On that page, we've also got the Spot 057 at Queenscliff. So it's Baden that was in here with us. Did an episode. You remember that, Scott?
Yep, I do.
Yeah, no, yep, there sure you go. So shout out those couple. I think that's all I got. But, yeah, so the Spotto 57, if you want to hear the story, that's Roaming Moses number 5, but also Baden joined us on episode 23. Any more synchronicities?
He's a 23 bloke too, yeah?
Yeah. So there you go, episode 23. So, and, I don't think we had you on that one, Skinny, but, you know, we've still got that connection. So that was about as hard as I went on the Sunday Too Far Away.
Well, my Sunday Too Far Away picks were page 145, the boys, Shannon Mansfield's pick of the boys pushing the ZJ Fairlane.
Yeah, wedding shot.
Yep.
Yeah.
Again, there's my ZJ Fairlane. So I had to kind of, it was a foregone conclusion.
Had to
that
incorporate
I was
going to pick it. Yep, yep.
It had to be incorporated. Page 144, Danny Fisher's shot. That looks like, I don't know what event that is, but a mud run of some sort.
Yeah.
That's what we do. Just get out and enjoy them.
Yeah, and see Barney.
And if ripping through a mud run is your way of enjoying it, then go for it.
I'm tempted to pull the guards off and see how much mud I can throw around the Nash. Mm. But, yeah, there's another Barney shot down the bottom. EH rolling into Patina Breakdown. Barney's pushing hard with his entries. Yeah, dropping
good.
Him. Yeah, no,
good on him.
It's good to see. No, because, yeah, I mean, he gets celebrated pretty heavy. He's been celebrated pretty heavy here, but just a good cat. Barney's auto.
Yeah, no, that's good. We're all about that. One other thing I do want to point out is Mill of the Month. I quite enjoy the Mill of the Month.
Yeah, yep.
On page 146.
Yeah, well, they're gone dado.
CA18 Nissan.
I'm playing into your hands, mate.
Again, I'm sure there's a couple of people that are scratching their heads as to why this has been included.
Yep.
I've got a mate with a CA18 in a Datsun 1200 ute that, you know, makes well north of 300 kilowatts. That's a mental car. Unbelievable. It's in a 1200, so, you know, you basically got 300 kilowatts in a wheelbarrow.
That looks a pretty high-end version of that engine.
It is. This is a ProFlow. This is a ProFlow built engine. I believe it's residing in the engine bay of a Datsun 1200 coupe. So again, ProFlow well known for obviously their high-end builds and a lot of that. Yeah, they've got a signature style of their cars, but they also have a dabble in. I know they've built an SR20 in a Bluebird. In a Series 3 Bluebird. I know that they have dabbled into some Japanese stuff. So, yeah, this is really cool. I just think it was a cool feature. The CA18 is not a bad little platform. It's a bit more I could put a CA18 in the Bluebird because they came with a CA. The last of the Bluebirds came with what was known as a CA20. So the Series 3 Bluebirds, Nissan Pintara, the first Pintaras at rear wheel drive, and the Nissan Gazelles had a CA, what's known as a CA20. Same, similar engine family. I think in the Gazelle they were fuel injected, Pintaras are injected, Bluebirds are carby.
Yep.
So, you know, the ability to do an engine conversion with a swap of a cross member into my car is pretty appealing.
I had a Pintara wagon and I never even knew what the engine was, mate. Other than the fact
it was CA20, that'd be a twin spark too. So
it was. Yep.
A lot of people bag the old twin spark, but it was an emissions thing, more so than anything else.
Yeah.
There was a significant marketing campaign around twin spark back in the day, but a lot of people like to bag the old Pintaras and the Bluebirds for having it.
Yep.
But Italian cars had it, and no one bagged them. So whatever.
There you go. There we go.
So that was.
Yeah, we go tough shot from here. So can I take us to page 12, Scotty? It's going to take a fair scroll up to get back to 12, mate. But trying to keep us moving because Scotty's got to go out for lunch with the in-laws today too. Look at that. That's a tough shot.
Yeah, righto. Mate. Well,
still got the fist out the fucking window while the car's fully ablaze. That's pretty out there. Page 20. I got a little bit carried away. Yeah, Lynchy. Shout out, Lynchy. So, page 30.
Yeah.
The rear shot. Just that all that fucking meat and those big pipes. It's just, that's a killer shot. And didn't need the whole car to sell that photo to me.
No. You know what does that? The whole, the rear end of that car, like those taillights, just work. And there is a portion of that story where they talk about the taillights been swapped out of a I'm not sure if it's an earlier or a later model Charger, but
yep.
Yeah, that thing's got some presence. I did stand behind it at Summonats, and it has just definitely got some presence, like some massive tires on it.
That big ass sword would fit nicely in that big ass trunk.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, drive it home.
So
that's kind of
a tough shot.
Yep.
I've got a tough shot here. Page 53 in the motivation feature story. is that Roland KE30 Corolla with the flames all over the ground behind it.
Yep.
That's cool.
Yeah. Nearly that E-Series too opposite it, mate.
Yeah, yeah, well, I had that. I was giving that a bit of an eyeball as well. E-Series are starting to creep into, well, I mean, they've always been a pretty good skid car.
Yeah.
But they're starting to see a lot more E-Series around. Actually, while we're on the topic of E-Series, cast your eye over to page 58, and there's the mighty AU.
Yeah, there we go. Yep, yep.
And they just achieved cult status.
That's series 2, 3. What do you know about them?
That looks like a series 1.
Yep, yep.
The front nose cone on it looks like a series 1.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but they've just achieved cult status.
You like the plates on it, Scotty?
I do.
Still reads the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my only other pick for Tough Shot was page 38. That's the side profile of that XA Fairmont.
Yeah.
Falcons of that era, look, most people tend to celebrate the hard tops, you know, because of the motorsport heritage. And, you know, let's not forget this little movie called Mad Max.
Yeah.
But I prefer the four-door sedan. X8 XC, my pick would be an XA sedan. I like the shape. I think when car manufacturers release a new body style, they quite often get it right the first time.
Yeah.
It's not often that the models that precede the original release offer anything. You know, like a lot of the time they make changes for change's sake just to keep the car moving sales-wise.
Yeah.
I think with the styling of the XA, was on the money because it was simplistic. By the time they got to XC, it was hideous. I don't find XCs to be an attractive looking vehicle.
Yeah. Well, if you go back to say even look at a 38 Nash, pretty much the majority of the body is the same body as my car's rolling. So yeah, right through to 48, but the earlier ones like the 40, 41 have got a narrower kind of centered grille instead of that big spread across the front, and I do really enjoy them. But on the subject of XAs. Mate had the teal blue XA GT hardtop that we took up to Summernats, had tunnel rams and Indy champs on it. His young bloke now rolls around in an XA GT, which what I can only call a tribute because he's got the flutes airbrushed into the guards. It's got the pins airbrushed into the bonnet, like none of it. But people wanted to kind of diss that car for those treatments. But the point is he's not pretending it's a GT. Because you could soon put flutes in the guards, you could soon put a bonnet on it, but instead he's just shouting out the GT in his car.
Yeah, he's shouting out the elements, that's fine.
And he's out there drag racing, but I've had to drag people over there to show them that detail's only painted on. Like, but it looks so well, it's so on point.
Yeah. That's why I think this car's so good because, you know, with Falcons in particular, it's really easy to just build a GT clone.
Yeah.
But you know, Ash here with this car has gone down the road of a GS Fairmont in that colour scheme. Now, that's a factory Ford colour as well. So, you know.
Next level.
And this is what I was sort of alluding to before with, like, you've got these beautiful colours and someone's going to pick brown. Like,
hang on.
Come on.
That pink is factory Ford.
Yep.
That's a factory Ford colour.
Cool.
Hmm.
Yeah, well, actually, Scotty's got a bit of a childhood that was based around climbing in and out of Falcons.
Yeah, well, the daily was the XB GT.
Yeah, they had the XB GT daily.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't tell you what episode we read. We checked that in, but it's definitely in our fucking history.
One of the early ones.
I'm just trying to see. Does it mention the name of the colour?
Wild Plum.
It is Wild Plum. Yeah, there you go.
Yep.
Yep. Very cool.
So, I can't remember the green. There's a green that the only Phase 4 XA to actually wear a Phase 4 compliance plate is painted in the green, metallic green with a white interior. And, you know, I really like that green, but you had all these amazing colours in the Ford colour chart back in 1972 and someone went with brown And there's a purist out there that thinks that it was a mistake to eradicate the brown and paint it wild plum. Yeah. Mate, you're doing no one any favours by keeping a brown falcon in existence.
Fucking wake up yourself.
Sorry to anyone who owns a brown falcon and thinks it's cool, but, you know.
Got to have a little bit of controversy.
Well, you know.
So then we move along to honourable mentions, mate. Now we can go back to where we were going.
Now, this is something... I like the tech talk features.
Yep.
But Simo has written a really this is a solid write up. This I had a quick read of this morning.
Oh, that's great. I've got to get back to it.
This is a solid write up, and we've all been to car events, and we've all seen someone have trouble with a car mechanically or electrically, or they've had a gremlin somewhere that just haven't been able to sort out, and it's reared its head at the worst possible moment. So there is a really solid write-up with basic side of the road fault diagnosis.
Great idea.
I think it's really important when you drive an old car. I don't carry a lot of spares as such in my car when I take it, but I will always check the vitals. Like the Bluebird sat for probably 6 weeks before we got it ready for this commercial, so... You know, I need to put air in the tires and, you know, check the coolant, check the fluids and all that sort of stuff. So this is a really well-written common sense article about keeping your car that you don't drive every day in good condition so it doesn't let you down.
Yep.
I always find it interesting or amusing that someone can pour six figures into building a car or buying a car or whatever, but then they don't have the necessary budget for a set of jumper leads or a jump pack or something like that. Yeah. And then they find themselves on the side of the road with a flat battery. Now, look, we can all call the NRMA or RACQV, whatever state you're in.
Yep.
But that's not always a feasible option, like particularly for me with, you know, soon to be two children under 3 years old. If I'm out in my car in a Bluebird with no air conditioning and it breaks down in the middle of summer and I've got two kids and a fiance, you know, on board, I want to get that car running. I don't want to be sitting around waiting for a tow truck or the RACV. Now, I've had an experience with the RACV here in Victoria where I stopped to help a guy on Punt Road in the city who in a WB1 tonner had lost a wheel.
Yep.
Early in the morning, sheared the studs off. The wheel exited stage right across three lanes of traffic, so it happened right in front of me.
Yep.
I pulled up behind him in my service vehicle, which at the time was a FGXR 6 Ute,
yep.
And I inadvertently, in the melee, had turned the car off but left the headlights on, so it drained the battery.
Oh.
Now, I got him on his way because when we put the wheel back on the car, I got the jack out, jacked it up, put the wheel on the car. He had like three studs left, so we just got the wheel nuts on it so he could limp it off the road.
Yep.
Now, he got on his merry way. I went to start my car and it wouldn't start. And I was like, ooh, this is very ordinary. I had the apprentice in tow as well, so we were on the way to work.
Yeah.
And it's Punt Road at 6:30 in the morning, so, you know, it's a busy road. It's peak hour.
Absolutely.
Right outside Richmond Football Ground. And, you know, in a sign-written vehicle too. I was, you know, working for a company called Airmaster, so the Airmaster signs all over the car. And I put the call out to RACV because the cars have a RACV plan and was promptly told that they wouldn't attend because it was a busy road and it was too dangerous.
Yep. He's going to leave.
I just need you to jumpstart the car. Like,
yeah,
it's got a flat battery. Just give me a jump and I'll sort it out. Like, there's no problem. I'll go and get the battery replaced. It's not an issue. Didn't want to know about it. Wouldn't help because it was in a live traffic lane. And I said, well, I can't push it because it's facing uphill and weighs 1,800 kilograms.
Yeah.
So I cannot push the car. They didn't want to know about it. And because I was in a clear way, the car got towed.
Yep.
And I got fined.
Yeah.
Fuck me.
Yeah, well, see, I've got...
And I had to go to the city of Melbourne. And so they towed the car. They impounded it.
Yeah.
But... I'd have called the RACV, all this had unfolded. They said, we're not sending a patrol car because of this, this, and this, OH&S, whatever.
Yep.
Never mind, I'm the one standing out in the traffic trying to get it running.
Yeah.
In my Hy-Vis vest.
That's all
and then the tow truck turns up, and I thought, oh, beauty, they've sent a tow truck. And I've hung up from the RACV, and the guy's like, yeah, no, we're towing you, mate. I said, yeah, perfect, thanks. He goes, no, you're blocking a clearway, so you're going to get a ticket. And I said, the car's broken down.
Yeah.
And I proceeded to explain what had happened, and, yeah, they couldn't care less. They towed it. I said, well, that's fine. You can just tow it. I'm going to get a coffee. So they towed it to a impound yard in Collingwood, and I walked off to the coffee shop, got a cappuccino, wandered down to Collingwood to get my car, and had to explain to the attendant at the council impound that the car had broken down because they said to me, you can't have the car. We're not releasing the car till you pay the $380, whatever the fine was from the clearway.
And it's fucking price gouging.
Well, I said, the car's broken down, mate. You know, like, what do you want me to do? Yeah. It's not like I just parked it on Punter Road and walked away to go and get a beer at the early opener. Like, I'm, you know, I'm performing a community service. I could have just ignored that bloke.
Yeah.
And it just kept going and got to work on time. And, yeah, it ended up being quite the debacle to get the car out. And I just said to him, well, it's a company car, so just keep it.
Yep.
Not my problem. I'll tell work that you've got the car and I'll just go on. Whatever, I'm not copping a ticket anyway, regardless. And eventually common sense prevailed. But they were rather miffed that they couldn't start the car because, as I'd explained to them 28 times, the battery was flat.
Yeah.
So they jump-started the car. I took it around to when there was a City Ford in Melbourne. I took it around to City Ford and got the battery swapped. But that cost me a whole day of work.
Yeah.
Because of the administrative oversight. Yeah, trying to help a bloke.
Yeah.
A fellow car enthusiast, I might add, that was very thankful for me helping him.
Yeah.
It was an error that I made.
Well, I've got Shannon's roadside assist, and they're pretty hit and miss whether they're in the area where you break down as well. Like, you know, you could be bloody, I might be heading up to Horsham today and have an issue, and all of a sudden I'm bloody 200 Ks from the nearest available fucking tilt tray or whatever. Like,
well, see, this is really an issue for those of us that, and I've learnt this lesson really badly living in a regional area.
Yep.
You know, I've had things go wrong. And when you're in a regional area, mate, you're on your own. NRMA can be, you know, they're local garages that operated on a contract sort of basis, you know. By nature of being in a regional area, you're on your own. So you just learn to sort of deal with things yourself. And that's what this article touches on. But with companies like Allianz, Shannon's, etc., the people they use may not have the coverage of your NRMA, RAA, RACV type organisations. So that's just something to bear in mind.
Yeah.
If you are going with Allianz, they have their own assistance roadside people.
Yep.
So they're not always contracting it out to the national motoring clubs to do that. So you just bear that. It's just something to bear in mind. And this article, again, is very, very good with a lot of roadside stuff. But, yeah, just bear in mind that if you do have roadside with Shannon's and you break down, you know, in Mount Gambier and there's no one available, then you're still going to be on the side of the road.
Yeah. And shout out Simo too for his Chad Rivens bloody T-shirt, because I'll just know if I ever go up there, I better be careful if I'm wearing that T-shirt that we don't turn up at the pub wearing the same tee. That's pretty cool, though, for him to carry that into the feature.
Simo's always good for a shirt.
Yep.
He's always good for a shirt, and the Leyland Brothers shirt he had on last week was an absolute ripper. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, absolute champion.
I'm repping Powerhouse Engines today.
Yeah, yep, there you go.
I got this shirt off Powerhouse when I was at Summonats many years ago, and it's one of my favourites.
Yeah, well, I've got the most patinaed Never Late podcast T-shirt you've ever seen, which is where you start to realise that it's direct-to-garment printing, you know, because, again, eventually, you know, she starts to fade a little bit. I reckon it looks all right. By the way, certifiedprinting.com, if you want to get yourself a Never Late podcast T-shirt.
To shout that out. Well played.
Yes. Yeah, no, that's what I reckon. Yep.
I will shout out another bunch of guys doing apparel, which are really cool. Moses, you gave me a couple of their deodorizer things you're hanging off your rear view mirror.
Yeah, Old Souls.
Old Souls, yeah. I had a chat with those guys during the week. Good bunch of fellas. Love the apparel, love the character that they got. you know, with the cigarette hanging near his mouth. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, no, definitely. And do old school leather, bloody key fobs and shit like that too, you know, sort of, yeah harken back to an earlier era. But no, nah, Pat and the buddy and the crew, pretty awesome, mate. So, no, nah, glad I could bloody connect you in there. I'm just going to touch on page 98 in the magazine, the Iron Maiden section with Samantha Holden. Yeah, just those two cars she's got. They're pretty killer between the 44.
Sorry, coupe. What page?
98. Yeah, 98, mate. Yeah, no, she's going well. But, yeah, apparently.
I reckon I've got a Hot Wheels.
Yep.
Reese has probably got it now somewhere. One of those ones, and Simo will know what I'm talking about. You used to be able to pull the back wheels down to give it some rake.
I know the ones. I know the style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They had the Goodyear tyres on them too, like the real riders, the rubber tyres.
Yep.
I reckon it was a 40 Ford. I've got it somewhere. If I find it in his toy box, I'll put a photo of it up so everyone knows what I'm talking about. But, Ford Deluxe Coupe.
Yeah.
That's just cool as. And like I said, I'm not traditionally been into hot rods or anything sort of 360s, but as I get older and my tastes change, I'm starting to find myself drawn to hot rods and a lot of pre sort of 65 cars.
Yeah. And she had a conversation.
Funny how your tastes change as you get older.
Yeah. She had a conversation with the old boy around the small block that's in that car, and he had to explain, you know, it's as traditional as anything considering they were putting small block Chevs into Fords in bloody the 60s anyway, you know. So it's kind of a traditional upgrade, not sort of some sort of purist fucking moment. Page 20, young Lucas Edney, 12, with his sketch of an XY. I just really enjoyed the sketch. I think it's cool.
How cool is it seeing a 12-year-old not drawing a Tesla?
Yeah, but even the front, just, you know, proportions are on point. You know, shout out our buddy, mate, Will Johnson.
He's picked every key feature. He's got the driving lights, the Globe Daytonas, or Bathurst Globes, depending on which flavour you like. Chin spoiler, shaker, strike kit, everything is anatomically correct.
Yep, absolutely.
Passenger side mirror,
It's great cool. to know.
That's a funny thing with older cars that some younger players may not realise. Passenger mirrors were an option on a lot of cars. My Bluebird, being a GL-based model, did not come with a passenger mirror. It was an optional extra. Now, might not seem like anything. The car's got one, and the guy setting up the camera rig on and I don't give too much away, but the guy setting up the camera rig on the car for the commercial filming on Wednesday was most pleased that it had a passenger mirror. The first thing he said to me when I drove into the car park, he introduced himself. He goes, "I'll be setting the rig up. This is what we have." And he showed me how it worked. And he goes, "Oh, it's got a passenger mirror." I said, "Yeah, mate, yeah, it does. Yeah, there's an option, but it's on there."
Yep.
And he goes, "Good, because if it didn't have one, this whole thing is over." I said, "What do you mean?" And he goes, "Because I'm actually setting a camera rig up to film an in-car shot via the passenger mirror."
Yeah, right.
So the camera rig, and I did put a photo of it. I didn't take many photos.
No.
I would have loved to have spent more time and got more photos, but
yeah, no,
it was really hot that day, and it was a hot afternoon. And those guys had a job to do, and they were under a bit of time pressure. So I just wanted to I didn't want to be a pain in the ass. I just wanted to let them do their job.
Yeah.
But one of the scenes, I think it's one of the opening scenes in these commercial series, is they are filming the reaction of a passenger via the door mirror on the car. So the passenger mirror all of a sudden was the most important feature on that car.
Yeah.
The car was chosen because of the era of time they wanted to capture. It was in the 80s, so they wanted a 80s car, and had to have a passenger mirror on it. I just found it funny that they were excited that the car had a passenger mirror because they couldn't capture this moment
without
the mirror. Yeah. And it was just really an interesting sort of take just the little things that people like look for.
Yeah, that's awesome. Take us to 53, Scotty, if you can.
Yeah.
Which is just, I don't know, just saw the number on the windscreen of the Corolla. It's got 308 as its entrance sticker. So, you know.
Yes.
You're ashamed to be in the Never Late podcast and miss that. Never fucking Never Late with our 308. Now, 66, the familiar R100 that I was dreaming of last night for some bizarre reason. But, yeah, probably 65 for the nose. It puts me straight back into the fucking bed out at Dunstan. It's just weird. I don't know how I must have been the last thing I looked at before I went to bed because it's nearly at the end of my notes. But that's a pretty cool car too. And even in that one on 66, just sits way staunch. And, I mean, we're talking six-figure cars, I guess, at this stage. So the fact that you can still go and do that custom, you know, heavy-duty street machine build around something that's kind of iconically and prohibitively expensive, it's a cool thing.
And I don't know if you've looked at an R100 up close. They're a very short, narrow car.
Yep.
So there's a lot crammed into that car.
Yeah.
A lot of detail and a lot of fabrication work. And I really like the fact that it's got a lot of the Japanese styling cues on it, like the familiar badging, the taillight applique around the number plate, and the GS. I mean, well, it might be a GS trim level car, but yeah, the GS trims around the windows.
Yeah.
Yep. Which is a more luxury trim level than your standard garden variety.
Yeah, absolutely. Page 140.
Sort of Summonats.
Yep. Oh, you did see that one at Summonats.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, well, I often look at the Lowells and I can't find anything worth frigging reading out, but I'm going to do one. An Englishman, an Irishman, and a Scotsman are sitting in a cabin in the woods drinking and playing cards. The Irishman says, "Excuse me for a minute," and steps outside. When he comes back in, his clothes are soaking wet. The Englishman asks, "Is it raining outside?" The Irishman answers, "No, it's windy." I thought that was all right.
Can I just touch on one other thing with the R100?
Yeah.
An emerging trend, if you will, is that on page 68, you don't have to cycle to the page, but on page 68, the digital dash, the LCD dash, has made yet another appearance. There is a bit more of a write-up on it.
Yep.
Inspired by Gran Turismo, the graphic of the car rotates through 360 degrees, just like the game. So there's another one. Now, readers can have a look through on their own through the magazine, but there is a couple of feature cars in here. We did talk about this when I did the mag review on the AO handover episode.
Yeah,
LCD dashes are starting to become a thing now.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think with a lot of cars running Motec or Nexus, it's probably a lot easier to run one single CAN bus data cable to run the cluster than it has been to, you know, I'm about to go through this with the Bluebird, rewire three quarters of the car just to make a taco work. It's just an interesting evolution.
Yeah, it is definitely interesting.
I do like the – what's that called, Resto Mod? Is that the name they use for that sort of stuff?
Yep. Yeah, Resto Mod, yeah.
We can go over that.
Yeah, Retro Tech is kind of what Chick Henry sort of coined the term as. But, yeah, Resto Mod is certainly a thing in the States. Like, it's Resto Mod's huge over there. I really appeal. Look, see – coming from small cars and Japanese cars, you know, obviously people were grabbing Datsuns and putting FJ20s or SR20s or, you know, Toyotas with, you know, 4 AGEs or 3 SGEs. Like, it's always been a thing with Japanese cars to grab an old car and put a later model engine in it.
Yeah.
Because by nature of the design of a Japanese car, like I was saying before with the Bluebird versus 1600, obviously the evolution, 510 to 910, the platform, there's a lot of adaptability in the platform. The other thing, you know, like with the Bluebird, like a lot of guys, 1600s, 180Bs have an underdash handbrake. So a lot of people bin the underdash handbrake and use the Nissan Bluebird centerpool tunnel mounted handbrake lever.
Yep.
So a lot of them lost their center floor sections for that too. So it's always been a thing with Japanese cars to modernise and put later model running gear in them. So the Resto Mod thing, I think, is a four-cylinder, definitely been a four-cylinder thing for 30, 40 years. to go the down the resto mod route. And I think that's just evolved as time goes on and products get developed. It's a lot when you've got something like a Haltech Nexus that runs an entire car to be able to just program a cluster to do what you want it to do.
Yeah.
And fit the car how you want it gives another level of personalization. It's really cool.
It's a really flash.
I just wanted to make that point.
No, I'm glad you did.
I'm into technical stuff like that anyway.
Made its way into three photos in that page, that dash, and yeah, three different angles in the three photos. It's killer.
I just think it's really like it's good to see that sort of stuff creep in. I like original instruments in cars. I like original dashes. I'm not really one on custom dashes, but I'm starting to come around on the LCD cluster. Not off topic, but probably not a street machine thing, but a mate of ours bought a Y62 Patrol, which is a V8 petrol.
Yep.
And he has removed the factory cluster and done away with it. And he did this himself. He bought a kit. He's taken the factory cluster out and he's put a CAN bus cluster in. And then the Nissan, it's just one cable at the back of the cluster. So he's taken the factory instrument cluster out and put an LCD cluster in it.
Yep.
Because the Volkswagens and the Mercs all run that LCD stuff from factory. But, yeah, you're able to buy a kit online and you can do the cluster swap yourself. And what it does is it gives you a cable. So you plug the cluster, the original cluster, into the new cluster and because it holds the odometer reading and that.
Yeah. So that's clever.
Step by step, dash around off, cluster out. You know, it's half a dozen bolts, take the cluster out, unplug it. Plug the new cluster into the power.
Yep.
Plug the old cluster into the new cluster via dedicated data cable and then turn the ignition on and it automatically sucks the programming out of the factory cluster into this new LCD one.
Yep.
Once that process is done, you bolt it all back together and you configure it how you want.
Bloody thirsty, those V8 patrols, they tell me too. Zella, my great niece's father, he's just bought one. For his work company vehicle. He's at United Forks in Ballarat. But yeah, he was sort of citing the figures and the old Nash gives better fuel economy than his patrol. But you get that.
It's funny as they seem to pedal the EVs and you know, Albo's got his new tax that he's gonna impose on anyone who wants to buy what they perceive as a non-fuel efficient vehicle, i.e. a dual cab Hilux, Ranger, Navara, et cetera.
Yep.
They're going to try and drag this efficiency tax into it.
And fuel will go up too, just to try and really cement it. You know, they're
the
starting
well, the funny part about it is, Moses, they can, all they're going to do, right, is knee the car market, right, square in the balls, right, because it's going to make cars more expensive.
Yep.
Manufacturers are going to pass on the cost. Those cars are going to get dearer. That's just how it is, right? Yeah. Any cost imposed gets passed on. Now, what that does, I'm a service manager of an air conditioning business. Guess what we run as a fleet? We run a fleet of dual cab utes, a mixture of Tritons and Hiluxes.
So,
now, when those vehicles get more expensive to operate, what do I do? As an organisation, we look at it and go, do we pass the cost on or do we absorb it?
Yeah.
Now, we'll absorb it to a point and then we'll have to pass it on. That's reflected in a higher hourly rate.
Yep.
So then all of a sudden the cost of doing business goes up. People are reaching into their wallets more.
Yeah.
So there's a two-pronged approach. I get a car allowance. I don't have a company car. I have a car allowance. Very fortunate. My car's 7 years old. Guess what? I'm not replacing it.
No. Yeah.
I'll just keep driving it.
Yeah, well, I'm driving
until such times as I can't because I will, you know, pay tax.
Yeah.
Or pay excessive tax for having the car for too long, or I need to replace it and I have no other option. I'm not going to be running out to replace that car. A lot of people on novated leases and that just change their cars over. They turn them over because you know, the tax advantage for doing that. The more the government tries to dictate what we can and can't do and what we can and can't drive, the cost is going to go up and it's just going to get passed on. So all of a sudden, driving older cars are starting to make a hell of a lot more sense.
Well, my Renault Traffic's coming up for 280,000 Ks, and I know the current one is probably 17,000 retail above what I paid for this one, which is just a basic replacement.
But I'm, you know, Blake put up a bloody post the other day selling a 2010 BT50. I'm thinking, fuck, that feels like me, because I had a really good run with those earlier BT50s, you know, and yeah, I don't know how much tech I need to adopt, you know, and how much bloody lane assist and eye monitoring and fucking all this other bullshit that's sneaking through.
I was put in a situation when I changed employers, and a lot of readers will probably understand this. You know, we've all got other cars. Those of us that are tradies are all running around in dual cabs and Land Cruisers and whatever.
Yeah.
But you know, I had a company vehicle when I worked at my previous employer, and I had a company issued dual cab ute, Navara, Colorado, whatever.
Yeah.
I had a Navara, and I left. Now, when I started my new employer, I was given the car allowance. So I only had 4 weeks to procure a vehicle. So I couldn't order anything new.
Yep.
Because Toyota, for example, it's an 18-month wait to get your hands on a Hiace or a Hilux.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously, I didn't have that luxury. So I bought a second-hand Mazda BT50,
yep.
2017.
Yep.
You know, one owner, low kilometres, ready to go. So that's fine. That was a sensible purchase, and we made it. And I've been very happy with the car. I've had them before, so they've been good vehicles. But I dropped it in for a service, and I jumped in a brand new 2024 model BT50.
Yep.
And before I'd even put the car into gear, it had beeped at me 4 different times for different things. And then when I pulled out and accelerated up the road, I had all sorts of lane departure warning, cross traffic alert, autonomous braking, all this crap. Now you can turn it off. The issue is when you turn the ignition off, the car automatically defaults to all safety systems back on, because we have to save ourselves from ourselves.
Yep.
This is the society we live in now. And so, you know, you drive the car, you jump out. For someone like me that's in and out of the car 30 times a day, turning it off is not, you can't just turn it off. You've got to go into settings and turn things off. It's a real
same,
pain in the back.
Same as me in the courier business, you know, you're jumping in and out.
There you go, right. Now, my partner's got a Kia Sorento, and it's the same, right? That car will steer you. If you have the lane departure warning activated, that car will actually correct your line.
Yeah.
Because if it sees, no, like when we drove to, where do we go? We went to Echuca. The road was terrible, right? So we're driving along, lane departure warning's active. There's a dirty, great piece of asphalt missing in the middle of the road. So you've crossed the centre line to dodge a piece of asphalt. Well, the car has absolutely had a heart attack.
Yeah, ripping you back in.
Yeah, because it thinks you're swerving into oncoming traffic, right? Yep. So the steering wheel all of a sudden is trying to fight you.
Yep.
And I think we've just, we're just a point too far now. So my car, my Mazda, has a rear vision, a reversing camera.
Yep.
That's it. It has no sensors. It has no safety gear.
Yeah.
So that was already looking, you know, further down the road. When I replace this car, what do I buy? I don't want any of that safety stuff. Not because I don't, you know, I can't, you know, because I think I'm a great driver, but it's a bigger distraction than operating the motor car safely.
Absolutely.
That's the bigger problem. And it's like we're solving one problem, but we're creating 3 more.
Yeah.
And then you've got, so the things that are going to keep me out of a new car is the overarching safety crap.
Yep.
And, you know, Albo and the government trying to railroad people into electric vehicles, which won't work. You know, and it's not that I hate electric vehicles.
Yeah.
The country doesn't have the infrastructure to support deployment of electric cars. And until we do, it's a flawed process.
Yeah.
We'll all be dead before electric cars are mainstream, just because, you know, we can't support it, and we never will. And until the government pulls their head out of their ass, and tackles that issue head on, it's just going to be a fallacy. It won't work.
Yeah.
But that'll keep me out of a new vehicle. It'll keep me in an old one, and I'll be less inclined to change my work cars over. I'll also be less inclined to invest in anything new for personal use, because I don't want all this overarching garbage.
But Rod's for climate change. Get every motor car that doesn't have a motor and find a suitable motor to put in it instead of building more engines.
Yeah, keep
more cars.
And you know what? There's a lot of there's a lot of pollution involved in crushing a car. So the longer we can keep them on the road, the better for everybody.
Yeah. I reckon I'll sign off on another lull too. A linguistics professor was lecturing the class one day. In English, he said a double negative forms a positive. For example, not nothing means really means something. However, in some language, such as Russian, a double negative remains a negative, but there isn't a language, not one, in which a double positive can express it, can express a negative. A voice from the back of the room called, yeah, right.
Yeah, nah.
Yeah. I saw the yeah, nah plates on the back of a car the other day. I thought, there's a fucking brother of mine. Nah, all good. I reckon it's probably a wrap. We've been here for a good couple of hours, mate. It's been a solid one. While that R100's still up on the page, what side would you hang the poster up, mate? Would you go the Grand Champion or would you go the R100 if you were to sling that poster on a wall?
I'd probably put it on the window so I could see both.
I love your work.
Or I'll go and buy another copy of the magazine so I can have two posters.
Well, you nearly bought another copy.
That's a decision I make on Monday because I'll put it up on the office wall behind my desk.
Yeah, well, you nearly put a copy on it up. You nearly bought another copy this week for not getting your subscription on time. So, there you go.
Well, I was out at the letterbox late last night, I'll go out and I'll put the sprinkler on to water the lawn. I thought, I'll just check the letterbox and see if it came, and there it was. So it wasn't there when I got home at 4 or 5 o'clock or whatever time I got home from work, but it was there at 7:30, so work that out.
Yeah, well, express post to Scott Kenny, Street Machine, if you're listening. Go express post on Scott Kenny's subscription because he needs it so he can do his homework. But, fuck, I tell you what, for a bloke that got a magazine at 11 o'clock last night, you've covered it well today.
Would you go the digital version? Yeah.
It's about $32.
Well, at the moment it's free for him because Mum and Dad still buy it for him for Christmas every year. That's his Christmas present, his subscription.
That's Christmas present. But do you want to know the stupid thing about all this, right? So when we were coming to Mildura to do that, when I was in Mildura when we did that episode, the first episode, the handover one, I assumed stupidly that I'd forgotten the magazine, right? So I raced down the news agent and bought it. No problem. All right. So I made all the notes. Anyway, we did the episode and I got home only to find that it wasn't that I'd forgotten it. It actually hadn't been delivered.
Yeah.
And it turned up while we were on holidays. So I just had a brain fart in the rush of packing a car to go on holidays. And thought, I haven't packed it and I'll just get one when I'm up there. But, yeah, it actually had turned up while I was away.
Yeah.
So it was that's just it is what it is. I just have to keep an eye out for it. And, it's just one of those things. I'm not that concerned. But I was thinking I'll just get up at 6 a.m. and I'll go down the road to the newsagent and grab a copy.
Yeah. It's probably time to hand you back into your world, mate. I might hit the road for Horsham. Might leave Scotty with his little room and he can go out for lunch with the in-laws.
He can actually go out to lunch, So, yeah.
Beautiful job.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. We'll catch you on the next one.
No worries at all. Cheers, Kenny. Scotty, thank you, mate, for your efforts.
Pleasure.
Uh-huh. Yeah, thanks, Scotty. A shout-out to Redactive Audio for putting this all together. Scotty has a sterling job, so.
That's it.
Mate. Appreciate it.
If you want to do something similar, get in here and do it, but just make sure I can still get some time for myself.
We'll schedule it accordingly.
All good. Over and out.